is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome to One Bills Drive on this Wednesday, this chilly Wednesday in Orchard Park, New York. John Murphy, Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours. Yep. Chris Brown is with us as well for a little bit here today. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are here as the Bills begin practice for the wild card playoff game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday at Everbank Stadium on the riverfront in Jacksonville. I checked temperature today, 61 degrees, the forecast for game time, with light winds, 10 to 12 miles per hour, mostly cloudy skies, really no chance of rain, about a 20% chance of rain anyway, 61 degrees. And John Hussey will be your referee for the Bills and the Jaguars. So you're all set up. That's all you need. No, there's a lot more to talk about this game. And Donald and I are here to talk about it all day long. Chris Brown in studio with us. We'll talk with him about today's practice in just a moment. Coming up at the bottom of this hour at the 12:30, Andy Dalton, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback, to talk about the amazing response from Bills fans to his foundation after his touchdown pass that helped put the Bills in the playoffs. Coming up after practice, we expect to have Marcus Murphy in here, the running back who may have a prominent role to play in the game on Sunday with the uncertainty about LeSean McCoy. More on that coming up. We'll have Thurman Thomas in studio with us at 1 o'clock. We may get a chance to sit down with our buddy Kim Jones from NFL.com and the NFL Network. She's here covering the Bills. So a lot of ground to cover, a lot of issues to cover, and it's great to be here, Donald, with the practice week beginning as we look at a wild card playoff game. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's time to start looking forward. The last, I guess, 2 days. We only had the show yesterday, but the last 2 days everybody's just been talking about the fact that the team is actually in the playoffs. But now it's time to start looking forward to see what they can do to actually beat this Jaguars team. And it's not going to be an easy feat down in Jacksonville.
No, not at all. And I feel like Chris Brown is with us. I know Chris is with us. I don't just feel that way. The Bills insider from Buffalo Bills.
Physically here.
I'm feeling a presence in the room. No, but Chris, I feel like this team, and you can speak to this as you were just out there watching a little bit of media portion of practice. I'm pretty confident that Sean McDermott will have them focused on what's ahead as opposed to the giddiness that's been prevalent here as to what happened last Sunday.
Well,
you agree?
Yeah, well, he said on Monday the 24-hour rule is in effect. And I think
sometimes it's not always in effect.
Well, yeah, and I guess this could be an extenuating circumstance where you might have some concern about that. But I think because of the way Coach McDermott runs this ship here, this is going to be treated just like any other week. And there has been so much emphasis on how this team operates on a daily basis to every player every single week, win or lose, that I think it's going to be relatively easy for them to just fall into that routine this week and prepare the way they always have.
And do you see that happening yet in the early stages of the week?
Well, I mean, all indications to this point. I mean, we really haven't had any contact, but I know the players had Monday and Tuesday off. I saw five players here yesterday getting in for early film work. Most likely is the reason they were here, Kyle Williams among them. And, you know, that's been par for the course to a large degree through the course of the regular season. So I just think it continues. Yes, they had to hit the reset button and come down from the euphoria of the weekend, but I don't think there's going to be any problem for them getting laser focused for the most important game of the season.
They're on the field now. You were out there during the media portion of practice. What'd you see out there? You see emotions out there? I mean, what's it like out there?
I think they're just loose, you know. I talked to Lorenzo Alexander about this last week, you know, knowing the magnitude of last week's game. They had to have that game. And, you know, guys on this team to a large extent had not played in a meaningful football game in a week 17. And this was win or go home, essentially. And I asked him, do you think there are going to be players, maybe some young players, maybe some guys who haven't been in meaningful football games this late in the year, that will grip a little bit if something goes wrong in the course of the game? And he said, nope, not at all. I said, why? He goes, I think we're a loose group by nature, and that really doesn't affect us. And I think that also goes back to how Coach McDermott runs this thing. He has them so prepared, there's nothing for them to worry about. And on defense, I'll talk specifically because I know this to be true. I'm not so sure about Rick Dennison and the offense, but there are certain rules within their defensive scheme where even if they are faced with a look or a formation that maybe is brand new and, you know, the opponent is trying to spring on them, there are still basic rules within the defensive scheme for them to fall back on and utilize on the fly in the event that it's something they haven't seen. Okay, well, we can go to this and we'll be okay on the play. It may not be the ideal play call, but it's something that'll get us through the down. You know, maybe we give up a first down because we don't know what's going to happen here, but they have rules they can fall back on as contingency plans in the event that something is presented to them that, you know, is not something that maybe they covered during film study and preparation during the week.
Chris, you mentioned how you anticipate that Sean McDermott will have this team laser-focused. As I think about it, that might be the thing that Sean McDermott does best.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm not concerned about it. I mean, I really think he has pounded the routine so relentlessly through the course of the year. Well, yeah, and part of that process is routine. We're doing A, B, and C on Monday, D, E, and F on Tuesday. Like, this is all that gets covered. This is how we do all of those things, and we don't waver. We don't change. We approach it this way every single time and do it to the most effective way we can, and that's everything, whether it's, you know, how much time they're going to spend in the meeting room, how much time they're going to spend on this specific drill in the practice setting. I mean, it is cut fine. Yeah. I came to the realization that this is a guy that cuts it really fine when we were talking about what he learned about things in the draft room, and he's got it down to the position of the phone to call the players before they draft him. It's got to be in a closer proximity to where most of the important decision makers are than where it was previously located during the draft the first time through it. And it's like, holy cow, he's worried about where the phone is in the room.
Heads will roll if that phone's not right here.
But that's how fine he cuts it. That's how fine
we'll put this phone here.
Exactly. But that's how fine he cuts it. And because of that, I think the players feel – There's a sense of confidence and calm when you feel you've covered all of the bases before a football game and you can play loose because you feel ready.
See, I'm glad you went into that because players can sense when a coaching staff is not calm. When the coaching staff is, they might do something a little bit different. And as a player, you're sitting in the meeting rooms and you're like, wait, we're doing what? Why are we doing that now? We've been doing it this way all year. All of a sudden, because it's the first round of the playoffs, we want to switch it up, or because you're playing a certain team, you want to switch it up. That's not how we've been doing it, and it plays with your mind where you're like, hold on, now, are you getting nervous for this game? Is there something that if you're nervous, it's going to trickle down to the players, and so everything from Coach McDermott down to the rest of the staff, down to the players, the equipment room, everything has to roll the same way.
Yeah. Chris Brown is with us, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com as we kick off the show. The Bills on the practice field getting ready for their wild card playoff game Sunday, 1 o'clock in Jacksonville. All right, it's the elephant in the room, LeSean McCoy. Was he out there today? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you hearing
about his stats? He wasn't out there. You know, I'm not going to pretend to know how his ankle feels to him. I did see him today in the hallway. He was in flip-flops, not a boot. So
flip-flops.
I guess that's an encouraging sign.
Yes.
I just looked at him. I said, nice and easy this week, okay? And he just kind of chuckled. It was very clear to me in the locker room on Sunday. He was very down. Everybody else was celebrating, and he's stuck in the training room, you know, getting further examination, further evaluation, treatment, and whatnot. And Tyrod even referenced it after the game, saying, I was trying to watch the game in the training room with LeSean because he's up on the table. And then I told him, I'm sorry, I got to leave because there's a 7-second delay on this TV in here. I got to go out in the locker room with everybody else. So I think it was kind of bittersweet for LeSean. And I think you can come around to understanding why it is, because here's a guy who's been the engine of this offense. Mm-hmm. He's put everything into this season and been a large reason why this team is 2 games over .500 and did qualify for the playoffs. And now here we are, here's the reward, and he's iffy, you know, for this week. The thing that I worry about with respect to the ankle injury, and I don't think any of us are going to get to the bottom of the exact nature of the ankle injury, whether it's a regular old-school ankle sprain or whether it's a high ankle sprain. But here's the concern with a player like LeSean and an ankle injury. I believe his running style makes it difficult for him to be the back that he is with an ankle injury like this or a muscle injury. When he had the hamstring injury, he could not be the same, you know, jitterbug style type running back. And I wonder how much this kind of an injury, even if he is able to suit up, will impact his elusiveness.
Yeah.
His game is being elusive. That's what it's about. The reason he never takes a big shot is because he is so elusive. The reason he can turn a 5-yard loss into a 4-yard gain is because he's so elusive. And an ankle injury or a muscle tissue type injury, calf, hamstring, quad, can compromise that. So even if he is able to play, I think the early stages of the first quarter of that game are going to be very telling as to just the type of LeSean McCoy they would have if he's able to suit up.
Could we see even some, I mean, this is not anything we would know, but some sort of a pitch count for him if he's able to go?
I suppose that's possible, yeah. I can tell you this. I know this guy, it's burning in his stomach that he wants to play on Sunday. Just from some people that have spoken to him, who I've had the chance to talk to, it's eating at him that he's not even out on the practice field today. And so, just as Coach McDermott said, the guy's a fierce competitor. I think fierce might be an understatement. This guy wants to play, you know, more than anything. And it's a stage that he hasn't had a chance to be on in a Bills uniform. And I think he wants that, even if he knows he can't be the same player that he always is. So I really think come hell or high water, he's going to really do his darndest to either A, drag himself out on the field, or B, convince the athletic training and medical staff, I'm good to go.
You know, I was doing some deep thinking about this morning.
Deep thoughts
yes,
with John Murphy.
Exactly. We all know McCoy is the key to the Buffalo offense. No one would dispute that. And I'm trying to think, okay, if worst case scenario, if Shady's not available, who then? You know, Marcus Murphy, Mike Tolbert.
Kyle Williams.
Not Kyle Williams. I didn't think that deep. Tyrod Taylor, you know, more of a part of the run game.
Yeah.
And then I finally got to, well, look, they just beat the Dolphins. Obviously not the caliber of a team that Jacksonville, and not in a wild card game. They just beat the Dolphins in a game where McCoy had 11 carries for 10 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, you hate to think of it this way, but they managed to squeak out a win just last week with Shady not playing a prominent role. Am
right.
I crazy?
The crazy part is the Dolphins are not the Jaguars defense.
Right. And the motivation is different.
The team speed between Miami and Jacksonville is very wide. There's a wide gap there. The front set, the speed of the back seven for Jacksonville, just looking at a couple of their games the last couple of days, I don't know if there's a faster defense out there. Maybe Atlanta in the back seven is as fast as them, and the Bills did well against that defense. But, man, there's a lot of team speed out there on the field. I don't know if Miami can hold a candle to what Jacksonville puts on the field, at least in the back seven.
I'm not saying it's apples to apples, but the Bills found a path to winning a game without McCoy,
right,
an important game without McCoy last week. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I think sometimes – we get caught up in the stats. Like, he might not have a good game, but he always finds a way to have, like, a big play, you know, where he can catch it out of the backfield and pick up a first down on third and 15 or something like that. So if he's not able to go, those are the types of things that you'll miss.
Oh, you'll miss him.
Not having him out there, or even if he's out there, not being 100%. You know,
right.
So it's going to be tough. And I watched that Jaguars defense this morning. Those guys, they move to the ball. The front line, the linebackers, the back end of that defense, they all flow to the ball. So they did just beat a Miami team that has some team speed, but they don't have it at, like, the linebacker position that the Jaguars do. I remember last year playing against the Jaguars team and watching them before they played them and then watching them in that game and watching Tyrod try to scramble and try to get away from those linebackers, and he couldn't. Because
Calvin
those
Smith,
dudes, yes,
Hodge,
those dudes are running right with him.
Yep.
You know, so it's – they need a LeSean McCoy out there on the field. They will have to play a very good game to be able to move the ball on this defense and to be able to score points.
Chris, it seems to me like we're probably going to nurse this baby right up until kickoff on Sunday, right? We're not going to know. They're not going to say. There's going to be uncertainty right up until they kick it off on Sunday.
Well, I think if he gets on the field even as late as Friday in some capacity, that would certainly be an encouraging sign. But I think there's a very real possibility that they try to rest this ankle all the way through the week. You know, so long as he's in the meetings and knows the game plan. I mean, he's certainly had enough carries to know what the heck he's doing out there. So I think if they feel it's best to save the ankle for the actual game, they might go all the way up to Sunday, 10 o'clock, and let him test it out then and say, mm-hmm. we good to go today, and leave it at that. I mean, it could very well be a game time decision type situation if that, in fact, is what's best for potentially having him on Sunday. If you got to wait, you're going to wait.
Yeah, I would think that is what's best for him. You don't want to do anything, make any wrong moves or anything during the week unless you feel like and you've tested it out with the training staff on the side somewhere and you feel like you can make certain cuts in practice. But LeSean McCoy is a veteran. He's been one of the best running backs in the league for a while now. He knows how to prepare himself mentally for a game. We're in the playoffs now. You're not worried about him being out of shape or anything like that. So you might as well just let that thing rest up all the way until game time.
Chris Brown is with us, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. He had a look at the Bills in the media viewing portion of practice about an hour or so ago. It's not just LeSean McCoy. There's some concern, Chris, about Jordan Mills, who's not practicing today. Can you talk about him and maybe the status of some of the others who are not on the field today?
Yeah, I mean, I was encouraged that Mills was out there with a helmet. He was doing some individual work on his own with Coach Castillo while the other players were in stretch. I think he's just trying to kind of get some mental reps in with Coach Castillo with respect to the game plan, knowing in the team portions of practice he's just not going to be out there today. So I don't think he's doing that unless he believes he has a chance to play this week. So to see him doing that with Coach Castillo here on Wednesday so he doesn't fall behind should he come back to practice in some capacity Thursday and Friday, I think it's an encouraging sign for him at the right tackle spot. Chantrell Henderson was in for him, much like he was in the game in the practice setting out here. Kelvin Benjamin was doing his usual Wednesday stuff on the side. He was not mentioned by Coach in the press conference today, but this has been the course of action with him nursing the torn meniscus in his knee for the better part of the last month. So he was off on the side. Matt Milano went off on the side with trainers. He's one of the new additions to the injury report with a hamstring injury. We don't know the severity of it. I did see him come out for two straight series, which I hadn't seen before in the Miami game since he's been inserted in the starting lineup. But then he did come in later, so I didn't pay it much mind. But obviously he felt a tweak of some kind there, and, it resurfaced here early in the week, and, they're going to have to treat it. He was out there for stretch, but he's not doing anything today either. He's on the side with the trainers.
There were more reps and actually some decent production from Ramon Humber in Sunday's game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought he played well.
Yeah.
They've basically flipped roles
yeah.
because Milano was playing even when Ramon Humber was starting, and the split typically is 65% of the snaps to the starter, 35% to the guy rolling in as a sub. This past week, Milano played 69% of the reps, and Humber had 31%. So, and that's really kind of how it goes. It's right around 65-35 or, 70-30, somewhere in there, starter to backup. But they're both getting time. So that's good because I think if Humber does, in fact, have to start, you're in a situation where the guy doesn't feel like he's been left out in the cold for the last month. He's been on the field. He's been working with the other guys in that front seven.
Chris Brown joins us, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. You're welcome to join us as well. Any other observations from practice today? You asked a good question today, Chris. I don't mean to sound surprised about that. But you took notice of
the tempo change.
Tempo change, which, it was noticeable Sunday against Miami. And of course, we don't ever anticipate that Coach McDermott's going to say, we did it, we're going to do it again. But
right.
I think they might feel like they found a little bit of
something.
Well,
and the only reason that I noticed it was partly because it was so darn effective.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I haven't seen him use it that much in one game. And maybe it's just something they saw in the first game with the Dolphins where they said, look, these guys are slow to get up on the line. If we get in certain down and distance situations, we're going to employ this and catch them when they're not ready. And that is, in fact, what they did. And almost every time it happened on second down. They got in a long. They had a couple of carries for negative 5 yards. Second and 15. Bang! They came up to the line fast. They got a 6, 7, 8 yard play, and now you're in third and manageable. And I think there was about 5 times where they did that in the game. They drew 3 penalties, and I'm going to cover this more on BuffaloBills.com probably on Thursday because I do want to talk to Eric Wood. I do want to talk to Tyrod Taylor today about this because I really feel like the offense has this sense that, you know what, we've got another weapon here. And in a game where, hey, maybe you don't have LeSean McCoy, this is something you could potentially turn to catch a team off guard. Naturally, they're going to see it on film, but you don't know when they're going to jump into, you know, hurry up, no huddle, bang, we're up on the line, snapping it on go, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think they feel they've got an extra weapon here that they can turn to if, you know, maybe their offense doesn't get off to the fast start they've gotten off to each of the last three games early in the game. You know, first series doesn't go well. Well, second series here, you know, oh, we get in this situation, let's go tempo and tempo them. And Tyrod used hard count also. I mean, Miami had 9 penalties in the first half. They weren't, you know, as you said, Murph, after the game, they weren't fully engaged at all. But still in all, when you can draw that many penalties, granted, off a team that's dirty by nature, we're talking about offsides, encroachment. They got them to do that and got free yardage in the process and in some cases kept drives alive.
Yeah, I remember talking or fans calling in and saying, man, Tyrod's more effective when they go with the hurry-up offense. How come they don't use that more? You know, and we would always say, well, you can't do it the entire game. But when they do it, Tyrod is a little bit more effective in that type of mode when they hurry up a little bit. I don't know what that is. Maybe because
less
he doesn't
time
have
to think.
Right, I was just about to say that. Maybe he doesn't have to think about it as much. So the fact that they're doing it now, I think, is a good thing, especially when you have a fast-flowing defense like the Jacksonville Jaguars. You need to do things so that they're not able to substitute guys in and out. And because they're a fast-flowing defense, they want to play that way. But now you're speeding it up on them, and it can slow them down because they don't know exactly what you're doing, and they're just getting tired because you're getting back up to the line so fast.
I think a good way to utilize that tempo with a fast-flowing defense is – you know, you get up, you know, you have a play, bang, you get up to the line fast, and then you run a misdirection play. Mm-hmm. That's the perfect time to do that because you've got these guys, they're up on the line. Oh, they're going that way, and then there's a misdirection play. You could get a really big hitter. You know, you work tempo on them in a no huddle, and then your play is a misdirection play. You could really get a team that relies on their speed to fly to the football. You can use that speed against them in a case like that.
I'd like to see a study, maybe at some point, maybe it's already been done, maybe I'm being naive, but just on the effective tempo, both for the Bills team in particular, but league-wide, you know. And
well, I know
Chip Kelly's probably already done it, as a matter of fact, but, yeah, you know, varying tempo like
well,
that.
Well, I know you have a lot of respect for what the Patriots did, even in the Bills game.
Yes, and they slowed it down, too.
Well, and they know how to do that. And,
you
know, Peyton Manning, when he was with the Colts with a crummy defense, would run the play clock down to 1 every single play.
Yeah.
If the drive took 8 minutes off the clock, fantastic, because that's 8 fewer minutes that their defense is on the field to give up a touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, being in New England, I just remember there were literally 5 different tempos to their offense. You know, NASCAR, I mean, they had so many different tempos.
5.
Literally 5.
Wow.
Different tempos to their offense and it's all on what Tom Brady says out there on the field. He'll yell something and you better be dialed in and get up there to the line of scrimmage. Just because he's yelling one word, he can yell one word, that means we're going fast. He yells another one, that means we're getting up there fast, but we just want to see what the defense is going to do. We're going to look to the sideline and get the play, something like that.
Maybe that's a little project for you, Chris, when the offseason comes, whenever it is.
He's giving you homework.
Yeah, give their homework assignment.
Like I need Murph as an editor now.
I need a study done, and I need it by tomorrow. We got one call we want to work in, at least one with Chris Brown. Tony calling from Buffalo. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Kind of quick question on both sides of the ball. First off, defensively, what does our tackle rotation look like this Sunday with a run-heavy team? I seem to remember that we recently parted ways again with DeAndre Coleman. I could be mistaken, but
you're right.
You're right.
Right now, I'm only seeing 3 defensive tackles in what likely needs to be a pretty heavy rotation. And my other question on the offensive side of the ball, if you could hold on to both, is the severity of Deontay Thompson's injury and what we can expect from Zay Jones. Here's a kid that was really stepping up around midseason, you know, made the nice touchdown, I think, against the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
He was really developing something, and then all of a sudden his snap count seems to have plummeted with the rise of Thompson, who is now banged up. So if you guys could touch on that, I'd appreciate it.
I'll say this about Zay Jones. They haven't even really thrown to wide receivers, regardless if he's in there or not. When Deontay Thompson is in there, they go to him. They seem to kind of gone away from Zay Jones a little bit. And to be honest with you, they're throwing it to Charles Clay, Deontay Thompson, and
LeSean
McCoy. Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin. They've thrown it to those guys because those have seemed to be the most reliable guys. And I don't think that's by design. I just think Tyrod Taylor is just the most comfortable with those guys.
And Tyrod will be the first to tell you, I'm just throwing to guys that I see that are open. I mean, Zay Jones may very well be open, but he just doesn't see him, or he's third in the progression and he doesn't get that far. There's a whole host of reasons why stuff like that can happen. I can tell you, just being able to sit in the press box and see the whole field, Zay is winning on a good number of his routes on pass plays, or when he's out there, you know, doing whatever he's doing, executing his assignments. It's just a matter of Tyrod finding him. And I think we do recognize the fact that Tyrod doesn't always see open receivers. It's one of his limitations. And, you know, the bottom line is this. It's clear that he trusts Charles Clay the most of his receiving targets on the field, maybe with the exception of Shady. And then after that, it's Benjamin and Thompson.
Yeah.
And I think he feels supremely comfortable with Benjamin because his catch radius is like a condor. You know, it can be off the mark and he can still make a play for you.
Right.
And Thompson has a prior history with Tyrod from their days when they played together in Baltimore on the practice squad and running taxi squad plays through the course of the week as backup. So there's a history there that I think is at work also. Zay Jones is going to give you everything he has on every single play. You don't have to worry about him. And I think in time, he is going to be a bigger contributor. I just don't know if that time is now. With respect to defensive tackle, though.
But before we leave that, Deontay Thompson not practicing today.
Not practicing today.
I just look at the number today. I think he played about 40% of the offensive snaps.
Right. He had a bum shoulder that he injured in practice last Thursday. So, you know, we'll see. I think he'll be out on the practice field and kind of gutting his way through it. He's a tough guy. So I'm not terribly concerned about it. Obviously, there's always a chance to have a setback or re-injure something. But I do anticipate that he's probably going to get himself on the practice field, at least in a limited capacity. If not tomorrow, definitely Friday.
Yeah.
And then just with respect to defensive tackle, they did bring Ricky Hatley onto the active roster. I think he was on the practice squad for like 2 or 3 days, and then bang, he was up there on the active roster.
Last week, middle of Christmas week. That's all.
6'4", 320.
Yeah.
So he's every bit as big as DeAndre Coleman. I think he offers a little more movement. DeAndre Coleman's kind of a stand-in-there-and-grind type player, and this is a defensive line where they want to get guys up the field, pushing the pocket from the interior. And so I think Hatley offers a little bit more athleticism, even though he's essentially the same size as DeAndre Coleman, maybe 10 pounds lighter.
All right. Chris, thanks. Do we get you in here Thursdays? Can we do that maybe tomorrow? Just kind of update on practice?
Yeah, we can do that. But we got a lot of question marks out there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no problem.
Every day of practice. And to fill in those question marks, you can go to Buffalo Bills. What do you got coming up? BuffaloBills.com, besides the usual day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, we've got our quick hit story up right now, which basically brings to light the highlights of Coach McDermott's press conference and, you know, newsworthy things that have gone down there. Like I said, on Thursday, I do want to get into some of the tempo things that the Bills have discovered they can utilize and pretty effectively in their offense. So, you know, we'll get comment from Tyrod and Eric Wood on that, since they kind of run the show with that, along with, you know, Coach McDermott's comment today. But we'll have Bills roundup with a full roundup on the video side of, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts of what went down today. Not to steal any of your guys' stuff. I know there's a nuts and bolts thing that Donald does.
That was yesterday. We've already had our nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Well, I know he's got it copyrighted already, you know, being the businessman.
Nuts and bolts, whatever. It's all the same. Thank you, Chris.
You got it.
Chris Brown.
Bits, nuts and bolts.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us in studio. We're just getting started here. We want to engage you in our Twitter poll. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. We also want to let you know about the results of the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Buffalo Bills. Votes are in. This week's winning player, who do you think? Kyle Williams, 74% of the votes on the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Jordan Poyer got 13.5%. Tyrod Taylor, 9.6%. Stephen Hauschka, 3%. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, we vote each week. You vote each week, the morning after each game. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Coming up next, you know the story. All those donations coming in for Andy Dalton and his foundation, he and his wife's foundation in Cincinnati. All of it from Buffalo Bills fans. We're going to talk with the Bengals quarterback when we return. Andy Dalton when we come back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hey, this is Bill Fichtner from Chickawaga, New York. You know, I was thinking the next time the Cincinnati Bengals play in Buffalo, and if their quarterback is Andy Dalton, can we please give him a standing ovation? Because he sure deserves it. Let's go, Buffalo. I believe, man. I'm feeling good about this weekend. Oh, yes!
Bill Fichtner, actor, writer, producer. He's been on the show. You know who he is. You've seen him.
Oh,
famous
yeah.
guy.
I've seen him out in Buffalo.
Huge Bill. You've seen him out?
Well, yeah.
Well, did he look like that? Did he act like that when you saw him?
Well, I saw him in a bar.
I saw him at a baseball game last summer. A great guy and obviously a big Bills fan. And he's talking about the Andy Dalton thing. And as of last night, Andy Dalton says they've had 7,000 new donors to the Andy Dalton Foundation, the Andy and Jordan Dalton Foundation, $170,000 raised. All because of Bills fans. Dalton threw the pass, caught by Boyd, touchdown, Bills in the playoffs. You know the story. It's been an incredible story. And we had a chance late yesterday to have a little chat with the Cincinnati Bengals quarterback, Andy Dalton. An amazing outpouring of support for the Andy and Jordan Dalton Foundation coming from Bills fans primarily since the end of that game on Sunday afternoon. Andy Dalton throws that 49-yard touchdown pass that wins the game for Cincinnati and puts the Bills in the playoffs. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the author of that pass, the man who got the Bills in the playoffs, essentially, Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton. Andy, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you, Andy. We really needed that throw.
Well, I'm glad that I could help out.
Hey, you know, Andy, going into that game, what was you guys' mindset? Did you know that if you beat the Ravens and the Bills win, they end up in the playoffs, or were you just trying to ruin the Ravens season?
Well, obviously there's a lot of different things that could happen to get different teams in. We knew that if the Ravens lost, and I think the Bills and the Titans won, that the Ravens were out. And I think there's a chance that the Chargers could have got in somehow, but for us, we were just trying to win the game. I think that's all it really came down to. Obviously, we weren't playing for the playoffs, but we wanted to finish our season outright.
It looked pretty bleak there, Andy, didn't it? I mean, you were there. You were playing it in the fourth quarter, down to the final minute. You're 4th and 12. I mean, that's about as dire a situation as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, we got the ball back on our 10-yard line with about 2.5 minutes left. And so at that point, we had to put one drive together and down 3 and to go down and 4th and 12, just how you draw it up. You want the drama of it, I guess. And so big play, got us a touchdown that won us the game.
Andy, did you see any Bills fans in the stadium?
In Baltimore?
I did not. I did not see any.
That makes sense. But let's talk about after that. And I want to get to the foundation in a second here. But when did you start acknowledging or realizing how important that play was and that win was to the Buffalo Bills and their fans?
Well, yeah, I think at first I didn't know what had happened in the other game. So I didn't know what was going to happen. But, after the touchdown, someone said that the Bills won and the Titans won. So the Bills were going to be in. And so we weren't really necessarily thinking that. We were just thinking, wow, the Ravens, they're not in the playoffs anymore. Right. So we weren't thinking about, obviously, the Bills at that time. But once I got to my phone after the game and I checked Twitter, I realized how happy a lot of Bills fans are.
Yeah. We're on the line with Andy Dalton, Bengals quarterback for the last 7 years, 3-time Pro Bowl performer. And now let's talk about the translation of your success, your win in Baltimore, to your foundation on the part of Bills fans. Who first made that connection that maybe Buffalo fans might want to donate to your foundation?
You know, I'm not exactly sure who it was that first started it, but I had seen one or two people on Twitter to say, we're going to make a donation to your foundation, and I think a lot of Bills fans should. And I didn't think much of it at the time. And then the company that helps us run our foundation, Prolanthropy, they reached out to us and said, you'll have no idea, how much we're getting from the Bills fans.
Yeah.
And literally, I think we were getting at least 10 donations a minute. And so, the outpour of support for our foundation has been unbelievable.
Tell us about the Andy and Jordan Dalton Foundation. It's you and your wife, right?
Yeah. So we started this back in 2011, but the main part of what our foundation does is we work with sick children and kids with special needs, and we provide financial aid for medical expenses. So it could be a treatment, it could be chemo, it could be radiation, and a bunch of different other areas. And so These families will apply through our foundation, and then we'll be able to provide them money to help cover these payments for these treatments.
Andy, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to speak to any of the kids or anyone in your foundation who you're actually helping, if you've had a chance to speak to them and see what their mindset is on all of the money that's coming in from, you know, another city like Buffalo.
Yeah, well, I mean, we haven't talked to any of the families that we've already helped. But I know with all this money that we're raising right now, it's going to go, and we're going to be able to help out a lot of families. And so we feel fortunate that you know, we were able to throw that touchdown, and the Bills fans are all on board. It's been great to have the support from them.
Go ahead now.
What's your mindset? I was talking to Murph. I'm like, going into today, he couldn't have imagined that he would get that much money from another city, because he actually threw a touchdown that helped that city get into the playoffs, and now they're donating all this money to him. You can't even imagine this stuff.
You can't script this stuff.
I mean, it's kind of a crazy story, because if you think about it, we did beat the Bills earlier.
Yes,
on.
Right.
Oh,
I remember.
So,
right.
So, I mean, to have the support, I mean, if you would have looked at, like I said, looking at my Twitter and stuff, you would think I'm the most popular guy in Buffalo right now.
So, we actually joked about it. We wondered if you might be the most popular quarterback in Buffalo these days. Seriously.
Well, you know, so, I mean, it's pretty crazy for this to all happen from another team fan base.
Hey, Andy, now I have to ask you this, and I'm a former player, so I can joke with you this way, but before the last throw, I mean – It was looking kind of ugly, and you had the interception that got called back. What was going through your mind when the whole thing happened?
Well, I mean, I thought we did a good job kind of moving the ball early, and then you know, we got stalled a little bit on that one series of, you know, I think it was first, second, third down. We ended up throwing a short pass to just try to get half of it back, and then. You know, it gets to be 4th and 12, and at that point, you know, trying to figure out, okay, are they going to try to blitz us? Are they going to try to just play a soft zone? What are they trying to do? And you know, they played a soft zone, and we were able to hit the seam. And so, yeah, I mean, 4th and 12. I mean, like I said, just how you draw it up, right? It's exactly the position you want to be in. And but I mean, big play for us to end the year. Obviously, we'd like to be in the playoffs, but. You know, for us, it was a great way to end it.
Andy, you were a college teammate at TCU of Jerry Hughes, right?
I was, yeah.
Have you heard from Jerry about that play and about that victory?
Yeah, he's already promised me he's going to take me to a steak dinner one night whenever we're back in Texas. And so, you know, I just told him I'm glad I could help him out.
Maybe you should fly to Buffalo and get the steak dinner. Then you won't have to pay for anything.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I think I could go around Buffalo and eat for free and not have to pay for much there.
Yeah.
What's that like, man? You go into a city and don't have to pay for anything.
Yeah, well, I don't know when I'm going to be in Buffalo again. Probably the next time we play there. So, I mean, but it's pretty, like I said, it's just crazy to have the support from a different team's fan base.
You know, there's so much to like about this, Andy. You know what especially I'm happy about is the outpouring of support from Buffalo fans for your foundation. And there's a lot of – there's a narrative out there about Buffalo Bills fans, and there's all kinds of video with fans misbehaving in the parking lot and, you know, lighting themselves on fire and just being, quite frankly, idiots. I think this turns that whole narrative on its head. This, I think, really shows what Bills fans are all about and the way they can respond.
Absolutely. I think it just shows a lot, like, you know, they're taking a good thing and making it even better. And so making the playoffs, but also they're going to be helping out so many families that are in need. And it really says a lot about the city of Buffalo and all the fans that are donating to what we're doing.
What do folks do if they want to donate, Andy? Do you have a website or somewhere they can go if they want to submit more donations?
Yeah, so if anybody hasn't already made a donation or wants to donate again, you can go to our website. It's andydalton.org, and on there there's a link for the donate tab, and you can click on that, and all the info is right there to donate.
Life works in funny ways. That strikes me, too, about this. What do you think of that, Andy? That's how this all has played out.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things for us. It's kind of been an up-and-down year just with how the way the season went, and we ended it on a high note. You make one play, and you it turns into something even bigger. And so I think it just really shows the impact that the game of football can make. And I feel extremely blessed that God's given me the ability to play this game, and we're using it for good. You make one play, and next thing you know, there's a lot of money raised to help so many families in need.
Amazing. Andy, thanks for this. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the foundation, and we hope we get a chance to thank you in person someday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Andy Dalton, we spoke to him late yesterday, the Bengals quarterback. I've never met him. Seems like a pretty good guy, and
no,
certainly his head's in the right place.
His head is definitely in the right place, especially everything he's doing with this foundation. And like we said in that interview, I think he's the most popular guy in Buffalo right now.
He might be. Congratulations to all those. I mean that. Just to turn the whole, Bills fans are somehow, just parking lot thugs, to turn that whole thing on its head. No, that's not Bills fan. I don't know who those people are in those videos in the parking lot. I don't think I know them. I've never seen them.
I've never seen it in person.
No, I've never seen it in person. I see the videos that go viral all over the country, and it's like, who are these people? And I love the fact that now the Bills fan image is these people were so excited about their team making the playoffs, they had to do something, and they turned it into a real positive thing for Andy Dalton and his foundation.
I've seen videos from other places as well, for other fans doing crazy things. It's just this narrative that it's only here in Buffalo. But now the fact that the team sits in the playoffs, the fact that all of this stuff has happened and the fans have now donated all this money, and it became a national story. I saw it on CNBC yesterday, the stock
market. CBS Evening News.
Right. Yeah. So it's a great thing.
Great stuff. Thanks to Andy Dalton for making a few minutes for us for the show. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to engage you on Twitter. Bills practice just about ready to wrap up now. Marcus Murphy, new running back. He'll be joining us once they clear the practice field. Thurman Thomas coming up later today as well. Come on back. We got a lot to talk about. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Time now for New York State Lottery Inside the Numbers, brought to you by the New York State Lottery. The Bills allowed a touchdown pass in that game at Miami last Sunday, so they finished the 2017 regular season with 14 touchdown passes allowed. That is the second lowest total in the NFL this season. The Vikings allowed 13. Just 14 touchdown passes allowed by the Bills this season, second lowest in the NFL. And that's New York State Lottery Inside the Numbers. Take a break from the expected. Play scratch-off games from the New York Lottery. What does that say to you, Donald, about this Buffalo defense? It's hard to make the case that the Bills defense was really good this year. They were funny. I never felt
they
like
they were inconsistent.
Yeah, I never felt like I got my hands around who they were on defense against the run or the pass. I know they took the ball away. That's the best that can be said, I guess.
That is the best that can be said, and that's the only thing. I don't even want to say they did that consistently. They had a stretch where they didn't even do that. So across the board, this defense has been inconsistent really all year. You can't put your finger on one thing and say this is what they did well. Now they did take the ball away, but they had stretches where they didn't. I think ultimately this defense, for the most part of the year, has played well as a unit together, flying to the ball. They had a couple of games where they weren't tackling and things like that. But I think for the most part, they played a lot better together as a unit than they did last year.
Yeah. It's weird. They should look at the numbers and see where they're at, just to kind of figure out who they are. Got a call on the line, Anthony in Dallas, who has a thought on our Andy Dalton interview. Anthony, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, appreciate you guys taking my call.
Sure.
What a week. What a week. Man, my wife thinks I'm crazy. Monday and Tuesday, I literally walked around my house all day listening to Bills radio. It's just such an exciting time. And me being I'm 31, I was 13. When we watched the Titans come back and win that game, my dad is actually lighting up some cigars. So I'll be with the game, be watching the game on Sunday with him. I already told him, no cigars until that final whistle blows. Great interview by Andy. What a great person. I actually went to the same high school as Andy and his sister. I graduated with his older sister.
Where's that? Texas somewhere. Where in Texas?
In Katy. Katy High School.
Katy, Texas. Okay.
So we're,
Isn't Nolan Ryan from Katy, Texas?
I don't think he's from K. I think he's from Alvin.
Okay. You're right. Alvin. Okay. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so we've kept a close eye on Andy's career. He obviously has a pretty good record against Buffalo.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just great to see what Bills fans are doing for a great family, a great foundation. It's just really cool. And it makes it a little bit more memorable for me and my family, watching that game together and me acting a fool after that touchdown. I thought my parents might disown me, but, you know, it's just been a lot of fun and love hearing the stories from Bills fans and watching the videos. It's just a great time. But I have a question for you guys. I don't know how much merit this has, but having Hackett and Marrone here in Buffalo, and we still have a handful of players who are on that team, does it help their defense at all, having those players on the team that can help on the system that they run and maybe identifying some plays that their offense is going to run? I know it's a totally different team, obviously, but just wondering if that has any merit and if that could help us out at all.
I think you have some guys on the team that were here then.
I'm looking at defense starters. Kyle was here. Jerry Hughes was here.
Preston Brown.
That's it, right? And defense.
Yeah,
and offense is Eric Wood.
And Glenn.
Was Incognito? No, that was Rex.
No. Cordy.
Cordy and Eric Wood. You don't have enough guys that can really spread the word across the entire team. But ultimately, you find out a lot of they crunch out so many numbers for the players anyway, and then you can find out a lot of different things if you watch the film the way you're supposed to, individually and as a team, where a lot of times you don't even need for these guys to say, look, this is what they like to do. You can watch a whole season of film on this team and see exactly what they like to do at this point in the season. Those guys can help out a little bit, but it won't be substantial.
Thanks very much for your call. Good to hear from you from Texas. I agree with you on Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I think – Bills fans should be nominated for Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Can you do that?
The whole fan base should win the award.
Walter Payton Men and Women of the Year.
Yeah.
It's a great story. I can't get enough of it. I really can't. For all the reasons I said, I'm not going to repeat myself. I do that enough in the 3 hours. We're going to break. We got Marcus Murphy coming up on the show in the next hour. Who knows? He may have a big role to play in the game on Sunday. Did pretty well last Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. We expect to hear from the podium, Tyrod Taylor and others, we think, over the next hour or so. We want to engage you, too, on our Twitter poll and get some more phone calls on the air in the next hour. We got Thurman Thomas coming by at 2 o'clock and maybe Kim Jones from the NFL Network coming up at 2:30.
Kim Jones.
A lot coming up. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Bills practice has just ended for this Wednesday before the wildcard playoff game. LeSean McCoy did not practice today. He is listed as day-to-day. Head coach Sean McDermott says they'll take it one day at a time with Shady McCoy as far as his recovering from the ankle injury he suffered in Miami last Sunday. Right tackle Jordan Mills not practicing today either with his ankle. Also taking a day off, cornerback Sharice Wright, he is in concussion protocol. Linebacker Matt Milano with a day off because of a nagging hamstring pull. Wide receiver Deontay Thompson off because of his shoulder. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams got a rest day. Bills made a practice squad move late yesterday in case they have to backstop themselves if McCoy can't go. They sent free agent running back Aaron Green to the practice squad, most recently on the Cowboys practice squad, originally signed as an undrafted rookie by the Los Angeles Rams. The weather forecast for Sunday in Jacksonville calls for temperatures at 61, 62 degrees, mostly cloudy skies. John Hussey is the referee. Bills and the Jaguars, the AFC wildcard playoff game coming up 1 o'clock on Sunday. You can hear it right here on our flagship, WGR Sports Radio 550. In a surprising turn of events, the Cincinnati Bengals signed Marvin Lewis to a 2-year contract extension late yesterday. It comes after days of discussion with Bengals owner Mike Brown. The Bengals wrapped up a 7-9 season Sunday with a victory over Baltimore, the win that put the Bills in the playoffs. There were many reports that Lewis was going to be let go, that he had ready to part ways with the Bengals. Arizona Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer announced his retirement yesterday in an open letter. After 14 seasons with 3 teams, he is 38 years old, drafted first overall in 2003. San Francisco 49ers say they want Jimmy Garoppolo to be their franchise quarterback now and well into the future. Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, among the 15 Hall of Fame finalists announced yesterday by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They will be voted on the day before the Super Bowl. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Practice has ended just moments ago. Marcus Murphy will join us momentarily, the running back who came onto the scene this past week. Got 41 yards, I think it was, for 7 carries in the win over the Miami Dolphins. We'll talk with Marcus Murphy as he comes off the practice field. We'd like to talk with you as well. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Like to hear what you have to say about our Twitter poll today and kind of taking a look at where the Bills are at and how they got here. I guess that's really the overall thrust here. How did we get here? How did we get to 9 wins? How did the Bills find themselves in the playoffs? On Twitter, our Twitter poll reads like this. What was the biggest factor in the Buffalo Bills making the playoffs? Getting the 9 wins, making the playoffs. What do you think the biggest factor was? A lot had to click into place all season long. 34% of you, about a third of you, say it was the takeaways all season long that got the Bills into the playoffs, got them to 9 wins and a playoff berth. 33% of you say it was coaching, Sean McDermott's leadership and his staff that got them to 9 wins and a playoff spot. 22% of you say LeSean McCoy in the run game, it was the biggest factor in the Bills making the playoffs. 11% of you have something else in mind. Let us know what you think. Give us a call, 803-0550. And from outside Buffalo toll-free, it's 1-888-550-2550. Number of folks on Twitter where sarcasm reigns supreme say it was the Bengals. Well, sure. Yeah, we know what got them there. I guess the question more properly would have been framed, what got the Bills to 9 wins? Steve Saviano tweets in, the only factor, Dalton to Boyd. Well, that's what eventually pushed him over the hump. But interesting. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550 to hear what you say about that. I want to let me think here. Where do you want to go? I want to go to David in Lockport. Hi, David. Welcome. You're on the air.
Brockport.
Brockport with a B?
Yes.
Sorry about that. I'm a little partial to Lockport with an L.
Oh, I feel it's all three. Coaching, defensive takeaways, and McCoy.
Which one's the most?
Which one's the most?
Yeah.
Coaching.
Coaching.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we beat Jacksonville, I'd like to go to Pittsburgh because in 94, when we went to Pittsburgh, they had a sign up that said there'll be no comebacks. There was no comebacks because the Bills took the lead and there was no comebacks.
Well, you know, they can't go to Pittsburgh in the divisional round, right? You're not saying that. They can go in the AFC Championship round make it that far. But yeah. if they win, their next stop is Foxborough.
That's right.
That's settled already.
Oh, it's settled already?
Yep.
Just seating's settled that, yeah.
Darn it.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Paul on Grand Island. Hi, Paul. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I got a question here, John. You remember where you were 38 years ago?
Wow. That is a great question.
8 years ago.
Yes.
Today or just in general?
Let's see, January 6th, 38 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So 38 years would have been 1980. I believe I was working at WBEN Radio. Bills are in the playoffs. I don't know if it was today, but what they had the game at San Diego that day.
Game out at San Diego, right?
Today, yeah.
Okay, flashback. I mean, when I saw the highlights of that Cincinnati Baltimore game.
Yeah.
Remember what happened in San Diego 38 years ago? What goes around comes around.
Oh, I see what you're going. Yeah. Okay.
They took a flag, took away. Remember when Charlie Rome intercepted that ball?
Yeah.
And the flag came down, and Faust had another shot at it.
Yeah.
It was Cover and Joyner.
I thought it was Ron Smith who caught the touchdown, wasn't it? You know, the big anniversary today, thanks for your call. Obviously, the big anniversary today, 25 years ago today, the great comeback win by the Bills over the Houston Oilers right across the parking lot here. I remember where I was that day. That was a little bit easier 25 years ago. And a little bit more memorable, I would have to say. I was thinking there's a lot. ESPN replayed a big chunk of their coverage that day. This morning we were watching it in the office earlier today. And I got to think about I mean, obviously the greatest moment in franchise history, the comeback game. But I have a feeling that, you know, and this is history, so it should take some time and some perspective. But the events this past Sunday, the Bills win and the Bengals win, are going to, you know, if you did the top 10 moments in Bills history, as our great crew did this past summer, somewhere in that top 10, I think, would be what happened last Sunday, right? Not just the game at Miami or even the game at Cincinnati, but the confluence of those two games and the reaction by fans, I would think, would be top 10 in franchise history.
Yeah, it's the dramatic fashion and the way everything happened. The Bills won the game. Now, let's say if the Bills won the game and then the Cincinnati Bengals just blew out the Ravens, you wouldn't have had the same reaction.
You're right.
But the way things happened, that right there is what will put that up. Probably, I mean, there have been a lot of great moments in this franchise's history, but that might be up there.
I would think it'd be top 10 at least, you know, to end the playoff drought, to do it in such a dramatic fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I would still put the comeback win against Houston 25 years ago today ahead of that. This sounds like, let me write this down. This sounds like a show where I have to do in the offseason here, Donald.
Top
10 moments, or how does this rank?
Yeah.
But what happened the other day was big, significant, to end the drought. The way it happened, the reaction of players and coaches and fans, most notably fans, it was big. It was unbelievable.
That was huge.
And it it deserves a place anyway, I would say, in the top 10 moments in franchise history. Not at the top, to my mind, but maybe you could argue that, but certainly in franchise history, somewhere in the top 10, I would think.
I mean, this franchise was, when you look at droughts across all major American sports, this franchise was had the longest drought. And so the way things happened and the way it ended with that catch at the end of the Bengals game, the Ravens game, and to see everybody's reaction, starting with the team in the locker room and then going around the country to fans down in Miami, fans everywhere in different bars, all of that stuff, it was a big moment. That was a huge moment in the way things happened. So, yeah, I would have to say it's top 10.
Want to get your thoughts on what it was that spelled 9 wins for the Buffalo Bills in a playoff spot this year. What was the biggest factor? That's our Twitter poll. That's what we're taking phone calls on at 803-0550. And outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. Steve calling from Cheektowaga. Go ahead, Steve. Steve, hi.
First-time caller. I just wanted to, weigh in on that. I think it's totally coaching. I think if you look back on last year's team, what Rex did, especially the discipline, the penalties, going from a 3-4 to a 4-3 scheme, I think is definitely, most of all, coaching. Definitely this year got us to 9 wins. And with a supposed way less talented roster.
I think I'm on board with you, Steve. I do think it's coaching for a variety of reasons. You're right. I think by most measures, you'd look at this roster and say, well, you had more talent on the roster a year ago, and yet – they finished with 2 more wins and got themselves into the playoffs. They're not dramatically better, but certainly accomplished more. And that's what takes you to coaching. That's what takes me to coaching. But the focus that Sean McDermott instilled, the fact that he preached process and let's do this day to day, I think that was a different approach than what they had here for the last couple of years. To come out of that 3-game losing streak with the quarterback issues they had at Los Angeles against the Chargers, to come out of that with the win at Kansas City, to me, the pivot point of the whole season going down there to Arrowhead. Yes, the Chiefs were struggling, but that is an extremely difficult place to play. And the Bills did a really good job in that win at Arrowhead Stadium to sort of rescue their season, right? They won only by 6, but I think they rescued their season, won 4 of their last 6. Couple of losses to the Patriots down the stretch. I think it's coaching. I do think it's coaching that got the Bills to 9 wins and put them in position to win that playoff spot on Sunday. Donald, what do you think?
I think the coaches, they played a big part in getting this team to 9 wins. They brought a different approach. They stayed to their process. They stuck to their plan and everything that they were doing. The players that they brought on this team, really just week in and week out, everything that they were doing, I guess, was playoff caliber. And it did get them to this point. But you know me, Murph, ultimately the players got to make plays on the field. And that's what it's about. Simple.
Yeah. I don't dispute that. But those players, many of them were here last year. In fact, some of the better players, some of the bigger playmakers were not here. Darius, Watkins,
mm-hmm.
Ronald Darby. So that changed.
Yeah, it changed. Even with all of those changes, you still got to make plays on the field.
Yes.
So coaches can put you in the right place, but you got to make the plays on the field. If you don't,
If guys are dropping interceptions and all that stuff, then we wouldn't be sitting here in the playoffs.
In this case, I think the coaching story here goes beyond putting players in the right place, though. It goes beyond schemes and tactics. I think it goes beyond creating a tone, setting a tone. Like, this is the standard. This is what we expect. This is the work we expect from you going way back to the spring. Yeah. That standard was not established by the previous coaching regime with, I think, almost inarguably more talent on the roster. That's why I would lean to, look, we're choosing one of a variety of factors. I would choose coaching as the number one factor that put the Bills where they're at today with 9 wins. Yeah, the players have to make plays, and they're put in good positions. But beyond that, I think their mindset was changed. As I said, the standard was moved up. The bar was raised for this group.
I'm biased. So
why are you biased?
Because I'm a player. And I look at it a
little
bit differently.
You can't think about it reasonably, even though you're a former
player? I look at it a little differently. I think players have to make the plays on the field.
They do.
And that's what it comes down to. And I know coaches, and I know how they talk. You know, I can put you in the right place, but if you don't make the plays on the field, I can preach all of this stuff all year and try to change the culture and all that stuff. But ultimately, that's why coaches always say this is about the players. They actually did it on the field.
Okay. Steve in Savannah. Hello, Steve. You're on the air.
Hello from snowy Savannah, Georgia.
What?
It is snowing in Savannah, Georgia. We got a good little coating on the ground. It's a little icy, making it feel like home from Rochester initially.
Did it shut down the entire city?
The whole city is done. All the roads are done.
Done.
School's out.
What do you mean done?
Oh, I mean everything is closed. Everyone is outside trying to enjoy the snow. It's kind of funny.
Okay. I mean, it was done in 1865 at the end of the Civil War. Then, okay, Savannah was done. This is a snowstorm. Come on, Steve. Straighten them out down there.
It is. I'll get them straight. But I was calling in to let everyone know. I work with people from all over the country at the Army Post here. And I walked into work on Monday morning, and it is not only Bills fans that are happy about this. It is everyone. I've got people that I work with. I listen to WGR all day constantly. And there's people now that know more about the Bills than ever, and they were more excited than anyone. I tell you, I walked in one of the happiest days of my life when Cincy won. I think everyone in my apartment complex thought I won the lottery. Everyone's going crazy. I mean, people are coming up to me and letting me know, like, they're happy for us. The Bills Mafia is going nuts, but the whole country's going crazy. And right on and go Bills. I'll hang up and listen to you guys. I love it.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Thanks for checking in. The Bills are a national story right now.
They are. I mean, because it was a 17-year drought and the way it happened and all of that stuff, you had so many ups and downs throughout the course of the season. And the fact that you sit in the playoffs now, I mean, everybody nationally has seen the reaction from the fans, from the team, all of that stuff. So it became a national story. Everything with Andy Dalton, all of this stuff has become a national story.
Let's take a call here from Jeff in Jamestown. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I got a couple of things I want to talk about, but to answer your Twitter question, I think it's definitely the special teams with house money and our punter, especially in that snowstorm game. All the key kicks he's made and field goals, I think, you know, there's at least 3 wins there. And then I want to talk about what happened while I was watching the game the other day with me and my 6-year-old daughter. But before I talk about that, we were talking about wild card games. You remember the 1981 Bills-Jets wild card game?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, Fergie was like on fire. The first half was 5 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns, and it was like, I remember we were driving, and my dad was in a snowstorm, and we couldn't find the place we had to go. So I'm listening to Van Miller the whole time. And then when we got to the house, Fergie threw like 4 interceptions, and then it came down the wire with Richard Todd, and he threw an interception to Bill Simpson with 14 seconds left.
Remember that. I remember watching that on TV. That was an amazing game. Absolutely.
That was, you know, Frank Lewis he was my favorite player. But when I was watching the game with my daughter, I said, Sammy, her name's Samantha, I said, don't come in my room until the Bills win. So she listened to me, and she comes in. She goes, Daddy, we won. The Bills won. And I said, yeah, but it doesn't matter because – the Bungles are losing, and we need them to win. And I said, it's down to one play, and I doubt, and it's 4th and 12, and then he throws that pass, and her and I started doing the dancing, and It was awesome.
Great. Thanks. Great memory, Jeff. Thanks very much. We're going to talk about the future and a guy who may have a little bit of a role to play, maybe a major role to play in the immediate future. This week, running back Marcus Murphy just added to the Buffalo roster a week ago. Got some reps the other day at Miami and likely to get more work this Sunday. Marcus Murphy standing by to join us live in studio right off the practice field. That's coming up next, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy. Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio here in Orchard Park. Bills practice has ended. Earlier today, head coach Sean McDermott met with the media. He was asked about Buffalo's newest running back, who saw considerable action last week in Miami. Sean McDermott was asked to fill in the media about Bills running back Marcus Murphy. Here's what he said.
You know, he's a player that that Brandon had scouted and Brandon's staff had scouted, and you know, like I mentioned before, he's had experience in this league. He's gotten varsity reps before, both on the offensive side and special teams. Made a big play against the Panthers when I was there in a special teams phase on a return unit. You know, so he's been out there before, and I thought he handled himself well this past weekend.
Sean McDermott on Marcus Murphy, and Marcus Murphy joins us in our studio right now. Marcus, good to be with you. Thanks for coming by.
I'm glad to be here.
You're from the DeSoto, Texas Murphys. I'm from the Lockport, New York Murphys. I'm sure are somewhere in the past.
Some Sinfolk in there.
Somewhere.
Yeah. DeSoto, Texas. Where is it close to?
It's south of Dallas.
South of Dallas. Yes. Close to Dallas? Or?
Yeah, right in the Dallas Metroplex.
Gotcha.
How long? You've been on this Buffalo practice squad for what? About 6 weeks or so, you said,
About 6 to 8 weeks.
And then the call came up. Was it the day after Christmas last week or right around Christmas?
It was around that time.
Yeah. And what? Obviously, Cadet gets hurt, and you were next man up, right?
Yeah. And Cadet is my roommate. You know,
oh, wow.
He's a very special guy.
How's he doing?
He's doing pretty good. You know, we spend a lot of time together. You know, he's recovering well. You know, and I wish nothing but the best for him in the future.
That was a devastating injury to witness there down in Foxborough. That were you there? Or were you back here?
No, I was actually home in Dallas.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was watching
Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But, you know, he's doing pretty good now. And, you know, like I said, I wish nothing but the best for him.
And so there you are. Not only do you take his place and you've kind of been his teammate for 6 weeks or so, you're actually living with the guy.
Right.
Does it feel funny at all, or is that just the way it works in the NFL?
Oh, no, I mean, that's just a part of it. You know, you expect injuries. You know, that's a part of the game. He's just like a motivation for me. You know, when I come home every day, you know, he's talking about the plays and the things he went through and just helping me out along the way. So, he's an extra motivation for me.
Marcus Murphy, our guest in studio just off the practice field. How was practice today? Your first practice getting ready for a playoff game in your three-year career, huh?
Practice was pretty good today. You know, we put in the schemes. You know, we came out with some juice. You know, we looked pretty good. We're just looking forward to this opportunity.
Do you feel like a heightened sense of awareness or intensity in practice?
I do, but at the same time, we're treating it, you know, just like we've been approaching every week, you know, just coming out, focusing on us, you know, doing the game plan, just executing that practice and, you know, just treating it like we do every week.
Marcus, Coach McDermott was asked a question today about kind of guiding this team, this Bills team, through these next few days. And incredible highs after the win at Miami and the, you know, the clinching shortly after. But now you got to settle down and play a game. Have you detected that? Like, how are they kind of getting you guys refocused after, you know, you don't want to kill the vibe from last weekend,
right?
But you also have business ahead of you too.
Right. You know, we did have a big win, and you know, we done a lot. We reached a point, you know, that we were really trying to reach. You know, we had goals to making the playoffs and finishing the season strong, and we did that. But now it's time to, you know, focus up and focus on the Jaguars, you know, focus on the opportunity that we have this weekend. And like we said, we're just approaching it like we do every week. We have a game Sunday. We have to come out, you know, and put in the work that we need to do during the week and, you know, go out on game day and take care of business.
This being year three of your career, your first time in the playoffs, how do you personally go into this game and make sure that you're not pressing too much or anything like that during the game?
I mean, my mindset is that I'm going to approach it the same way I did last week. You know, it's a postseason game, but I'm treating it just like a regular season, you know, a regular Sunday. You know, you got to come out, you have to execute during the week, you know, put in the work. And, I mean, I have Mike Tolbert, you know, I have guys like Pat, DeMarco, you know, they've been in the playoffs. They've been in this situation before. So, you know, I just look up to those guys, and they give out, you know, little pointers and everything to help me out.
Now, for people on the MSG side, if we can bring his bio back up, I got to talk to you about this picture for a second, okay, so we can laugh for a second. Because it looks like you have, like, some soul glow in your hair right there.
Oh, man.
Is that what you got going
on? Yeah,
that
was a ooh, I don't even remember when I took that picture. Yeah, that was when I first cut my hair. Yeah, I had a little curl
little
going.
And berries in there.
That was a Saints picture, I presume,
oh,
right?
Man. When you first came in the league. That was when I was in New Orleans.
Funny. Yeah, you came as a seventh-round pick out of Missouri. You had great record at Missouri. In fact, as a kick returner, that's where most of your success was, right? And you had some big plays as a kick returner.
Yes, sir. I pride myself on special teams, and I knew coming into the league that would be a big part of my game. In college, I did a lot with punt returns and kick returns. So, I mean, that was a big part of my game coming in. I prided myself on, you know, doing the best I could on every return. Each rep I get, just make the best of it, trying to take it to the house. You know, I consider myself a playmaker. Every time I touch the ball, I want to make a play. So that was a big part of my game.
And you've always been like that. You say you were recruited out of high school as an athlete.
Right.
So you played corner and running back.
Right. Yeah, I played corner, running back. I played a lot of special teams in high school. So, I just wanted my hands on the ball, you know, and just being able to make a play whenever I get the chance.
Coach McDermott talked about a return play that you made apparently against Carolina a couple of years ago. Do you remember that play?
Yes, sir. It was my rookie year. We played Carolina. I was with the Saints. And I was nervous, you know, it was like week two or three.
Wow.
I was, you know, young rookie back there, and they punted me the ball and, you know, made a couple guys miss, took it down the sideline for about 74 yards. So, you know, it was a special time in my career. That was my first touchdown, actually. So, you know, I got a little confidence after that. And you know,
I can see why that would make an impression on Coach McDermott.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
70. And speed is your game, right?
Yes,
tell
sir.
Me your 40 time, what you ran at the combine, how you do with speed these days.
My 40 was a 4.45.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And there's much more to the game than that, obviously, but that gives you a head start, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think, you know, vision and, you know, just being able to reach your blocks and being patient, you know, those are important as a runner, too.
Now, do you feel like in your third year now the game has slowed down to you where you can actually – in my rookie year, things are moving fast. And I played kickoff return just like you. I played a lot of special teams. But then when I got on the field, it was like, woo, things were going fast. You feel like it slowed down a little bit for you?
It has. It has. The game slowed down. And I think that comes with me understanding the game, you know, me understanding our offensive schemes and the things we're trying to do and the special team schemes, you know, everything that we're trying to do and execute. You know, once you study a lot of film and, you know, you go out there and you see it actually happen, it does slow down for you.
Marcus Murphy, our guest, Bills running back. Marcus, your career started with the Saints, as you said, seventh-round pick, a couple of years there, and then you bounce around a little bit, right? Practice squad of the Jets and the Colts before you came here this year?
Yes, sir. I did training camp. I was with the Jets. I did practice squad with them for a couple weeks. Then I did a practice squad with the Colts for a couple weeks, and I ended up here on the practice squad. You know, I just take pride in, you know, each position that I get, each opportunity I get, and want to make the most of it.
How hard is it to bounce around like that and not be on the 53?
It was pretty tough. The last 2 years I've been on the 53, you know, so coming into this situation, you know, where you're offered a practice squad, it was tough at first, you know, but I had to take what I was given and run with it. You know, I approached every day like I was playing on Sunday. I wanted to come out and just give a good look on the practice squad. Just come out and make a play, you know, make an impression. And I believe, you know, I did pretty good, and I just want to keep going forward.
I mean, coaches always talk about how they expect practice squad players to be ready, but here you are finishing up a season basically, right?
Right.
One regular season game left to go.
Right.
In your mind, you got to be thinking, well, I'm not going to get a shot this year. And then, boom, all of a sudden you got a shot not just to play but to carry the ball this past Sunday.
Right. And like I said, you know, I've been preparing all year. You know, even though I was on the practice squad, I had been preparing like I was playing on Sundays. And goes back to a cadet. You know, he was my roommate, and he was active. So, you know, we were both getting in extra work. You know, we were going over plays, and, you know, he kept me up to speed. So, you know, we helped each other out on that.
Tell me about the game itself last week. You got the you know, Shady goes out, so all of a sudden the workload fell to you, especially in the second half, right? 7 carries, 41 yards, and some pretty good carries too. After most of your experience had been at return work, all of a sudden you're in the game as kind of the lead running back for most of that second half the other day.
Right. I think me and Tober, you know, we did a good job, you know, running the ball. You know, thanks to the O-line, you know, they did well up front. You know, Shady is a big part of our offense, you know. And I think we just knew that we couldn't replace him, so we just had to step up and do the things that we needed to do, you know, just to keep the offense going.
What's going through your mind when Shady goes down, and everybody knows he's a huge part of the offense? He goes down, and so you're like, oh, man, that's messed up. You need LeSean McCoy, but at the same time, I'm about to get some work in.
Right.
What's going through your mind now?
I mean, he's, like I said, he's a big part of our offense, you know, and to see him go down, you know, it was tough, you know, but we had been preparing all week, you know, we were ready. We just knew we just had to step up, you know, and get in and execute when we had the opportunity. And that's what I like, you know, I pride myself on making the most of each opportunity I get. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what happened. You just got to go out and be prepared and just be ready to execute when you get the chance.
They put you in on returns, too, the Bills did last week.
Yes, sir.
And a different sort of a look with two return guys, right, which I had not seen all season. Is that – was there a situation involved there, or was it just the threat that you might present for an opposing team?
I mean, that was my first week being active, so, you know, that was just part of the game plan we had that week. You know, we went double returners, me and Tate back there.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, from the other vets, you know, I take a lot of tips and pointers from Brandon Tate. You know, he helped me out a lot being back there, and, you know, we were able to execute a couple plays.
The fact that you played return your entire life, you were recruited as an athlete, means that you can catch the ball a little bit. You caught a pass in the game.
Right.
Is that something you also have worked on since you came into the league, not just running the ball but catching the ball out of the backfield?
Oh, yeah. That's been a big part of my game, too. You know, I'm not the biggest running back, you know, so I have to use my speed and my talents and abilities, you know, as an advantage. And I think I have some good hands. You know, I come out of the backfield. I've been doing it all my career. So, you know, coming out of the backfield, you know, running routes and, you know, being able to run good routes, you know, that's part of my game that I take pride in.
Marcus, we're not going to ask you about, you know, game plan here, but obviously there's uncertainty about Shady. I would think you got to be, like, laser-focused on game plan as far as what that you might be asked to do this week, right? I mean, you could play a prominent role in this very important wild card playoff game.
Exactly. And, I mean, for me, you know, it really doesn't change my approach to practice. I've been, you know, preparing well all year, you know, just like I said, making the most of every opportunity, every practice rep, every time I get the ball, you know, I just want to make an impression and make a play. So I'll just continue to do that this week, you know, and we'll see how everything goes on Sunday.
What do you see in this Jacksonville defense? I mean, it's one of the top-ranked defenses in the league. What do you see in them personally?
I mean, they're really good. You know, they fly around. You know, they pursue to the ball. And, I mean, we're just going to have to come out and execute. You know, we know they're a top-ranked defense. You know we're going to get their all. You know, it's a playoff game. You know, it's win or go home. So we're just going to have to come out and focus on us, you know, the details and executing like we always do. And, you know, we'll get the job done.
How do you like Buffalo so far, Marcus?
I'm loving it.
Really?
I'm from Texas, so the snow is, you know, I'm getting used to it, but I'm loving it.
I think Buffalo likes you. In fact, my son, Mark Murphy, his girlfriend and his brother started calling him Marcus after
okay.
the game Sunday.
Great fans. Wow. Great atmosphere.
You know,
I love it.
Go ahead.
You were here for a home game, right?
I was.
So you know what this atmosphere is like here in the stadium.
Right.
You played down in New Orleans, which is known for its atmosphere down there in that dome. So how does that compare?
It's different. That's all I can say. It's different. In New Orleans, you know, there are some diehard fans.
Yeah.
But here, I actually was here on the sideline. I was on practice squad, but for the snow game.
Yeah.
And that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, with all the snow, with everything going down, we still had fans. We still – man, it was amazing,
yeah.
You know, and I love the fans here. I love the city,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm just looking forward to a good time.
Donald's question got me thinking about the difference, and New Orleans fans are very passionate fans, but
right.
You always get, and I've been there a couple times for games, you always get the sense that in the back of their minds those fans are thinking, well, if you don't win, we'll just go on a Bourbon Street. We'll just go to the great restaurants and hang out at some bars or something, right? I mean, it's not that here. It means everything to these
exactly.
folks.
Exactly. You know? And you can see that. You can see that from this past weekend. I've been seeing a lot of videos on social media from, you know, when he threw the touchdown in Cincy. So, I'm loving it here.
We're glad to have you. We thank you for coming by here today. Thanks very much, and good luck this week, wherever this week takes you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Marcus Murphy, Bill's new running back, who got a lot of work in the second half last week in Miami, and who knows, maybe more work to come this week as the Bills play that wild card game in Jacksonville. Donald and I back to talk more about that, and we expect to hear from Tyrod Taylor when we return also. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Congratulations to all of the staff, Coach Sean McDermott. I know I always knew you had it in you. To his entire staff, to the players, way to rise up, man. You guys kept pounding, bro. Like, that's good stuff, man. You did something that, you know, a lot of guys who came before you tried to change, but we couldn't. But I just want to say congrats to everybody, even to everyone in the city of Buffalo. You deserve it. Enjoy this thing. Enjoy it. Look forward to seeing you guys play in the playoffs.
That is Takeo Spikes. You know that voice. Takeo Spikes sending along his congratulatory wishes to the Buffalo Bills, one of the all-time favorites, Takeo. Congratulations to the staff and to Coach McDermott and to the players. And good to hear from Takeo.
So, obviously, people watch the playoff games because they're playoff games. Mm-hmm. I remember last year there were a few playoff games that I was like, I really don't care about watching that game, especially the wild card round. I think a lot of people are going to watch this Bills-Jaguars game because of the story of the Bills and how they made it in and ending the drought and all of that stuff. They want to see
all of the videos.
Of the videos. They want to see, man, can they actually win a playoff game now for the first time since, what'd you say, 95? Can they win a playoff game now? Can they beat the Jaguars that have been playing well all year? I think a lot of people are going to watch this game and pay attention to the Bills.
They're America's team.
Oh.
this week they are. Would anybody dispute that? You don't think the Bills are America's team right now? I'm not talking about
right now. They might be. Would you consider it like a Cinderella story? Uh-huh. How everything went down and all that.
Uh-huh. Even people who don't pay attention are paying attention to this story.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty fun to be right in the middle of it. I mean, we're right in the middle of it here at One Bills Drive. Thanks very much for joining us here today. Practice wrapped up about 45 minutes or so ago, and Tyrod Taylor stepped to the podium and answered questions about this coming game, about last week's game, and he started out answering questions about this week's opponents, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
A very talented team, a very talented defense across the board, up front at the linebacker position, and of course on the back end. They definitely pose a great challenge to anyone they play against, just because of the number of talented players that they have out there on the field. Like every week, it boils down to execution for us, staying ahead of the chains, and we have to be good at that on early downs to give ourselves a good shot on third downs to be able to move the chains.
Have you noticed, as well as they've done in almost every department, though, their chunk plays have been available. Teams have found them. You clearly see that. And do you sense an opportunity to get some of those plays at least?
I think you have to be patient with your approach. Their defense, you have to be able to take what they give you, but at the same time be able to take advantage of their big plays and with the different coverages that you get. Like I said, it's about patience and being able to execute play in and play out.
Your guys' use of tempo last week seemed to be maybe the most effective it's been all season long. Do you guys feel like you've come upon another weapon that you guys can add to your offensive arsenal here?
Definitely a strength of our offense is being able to go tempo, catch defenses by surprise, and as well as keep certain personnel groups on the field. The good thing about our offense is that we're able to get into that with any personnel. So we have to be able to take advantage of that when the opportunity presents itself and go out there and make plays in our tempo offense.
Whether it's in the game plan or not, do you feel like, let's just say hypothetically, maybe first possession doesn't go great, and maybe you get to your second one and you say, hey, let's just jump. I mean, you and Coach Dennison might say, hey, let's just jump into it here, see if we can get something rolling. I mean, is that a way to kick your offense into a rhythm too sometimes?
Yes, I think so. It's definitely a feel of the game when and if we do kick into our tempoed offense. And that comes with communication from players to coaches on the sideline and just letting them know what we see out there and if we feel it's a good time for us to get into our tempoed offense.
Your game is defined by, among other things, not turning it over and not making those mistaken throws. But it's, does playoff time in any way alter thinking that you personally, as a quarterback, have to push yourself to be more aggressive at times that maybe in another situation you wouldn't be? Does it alter thinking at all as far as aggressiveness?
I don't think so. Of course, you want to do what got you to this point, just better. Protecting the football is definitely critical in the playoffs because possessions are limited, and you want to be able to take advantage of each and every possession. So as far as being aggressive, yes, you have to pick and choose when you do that, and I think I've done a good job of that throughout the year. Like I said, you just want to continue to keep doing the things that got you to this point, just dial in on the detail and focus and do it better and just take your game to another level, myself and as a team.
Considering your journey, you came to this team as a free agent after backing up for 4 years. Could you have ever imagined yourself in this position? I mean, how did you allow yourself mentally to kind of deal with this from the time that you got here and then had a chance as a starter and then it's finally arrived? Did you ever picture that?
I mean, I've always worked towards getting the opportunity to start, and of course, once you start, you want to get to championship. I was fortunate enough to be a backup on the team that won the Super Bowl, and to see throughout my 4 years there, we went to the playoff 3 out of the 4 years, and like I said, won a Super Bowl. So to be on that team and to see that process throughout the year, of course, I mean, you sit back and you're like, man, I want to get a chance to be able to be the leader, the guy that's calling the shots eventually. And I mean, the opportunity is here. You got to take it day by day. Thankful for the opportunity. We are as a team, and we're focusing each and every day to go out and make the best of our day preparation wise and to have a great game on Sunday.
And does the fact that you're quarterback this team to the postseason, you have a chance to win at least one postseason game, do you think that could alter how your future might play out here versus the perceived idea that this team would move on from you after this season? How do you see it?
I think y'all know me now as far as I don't focus on things that I can't control. And I'm going to continue to be that way. And all I can control right now is my preparation, my focus, my work ethic to putting it all in for this week. It's a one-game season right now, and that's for everyone. And I can't allow distractions or thinking too far ahead. Just focus on practice. And right now, like I said a couple weeks ago, focus on a great lunch.
Lunch. Tyrod, he ended it with lunch. Tyrod Taylor there talking about getting prepared for this playoff game. The biggest thing is that we talk about this team not having too many guys that have been in the playoffs, have been all the way to the Super Bowl. They have some coaches that have done it, but not as players, guys who are on the field. Tyrod Taylor has, not as a starter,
right?
But he's been through all of this stuff a few times as a backup, you know, down in Baltimore. Obviously, they went on and won the Super Bowl. So how do you think that bodes for him in this game? This is his first time starting in a playoff game, but how do you think it bodes for him?
Well, I mean, he knows, I guess, what the run-up will be, but I'm guessing, you could probably speak more to this than me, there can be no substitute for the experience of actually playing and starting in a playoff game, and especially at the quarterback spot.
Right.
I mean, you throw the quarterback the keys, the car.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's your show now, right?
Right.
And this goes to your earlier point about players making plays. You know, regardless of what the run-up to the game has been, what the game plan looks like, what the tone and tenor of the week has been, once they kick it off at 1:05 on Sunday, Tyrod is he's got to play and probably has as much influence over that game along with Blake Bortles as anybody else.
And to be honest with you, I mean, depending on what happens with LeSean McCoy, he might have to have a much more of an influence on this game and play that much better because they might not – who knows if they'll have their guy at 100% or even out there on the field at all.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, this is a big game for Tyrod and his career here. And his career moving forward, if he's not here, this is a huge game for him. The fact that he's been in it already, I mean, preparation-wise, he knows how to prepare. But
sure,
like you said, once he gets on the field and that whistle blows and that thing is kicked off, it's time to go to work.
He's had some good recent performances, Donald. I was crunching numbers earlier this morning and dealing particularly with Tyrod Taylor. you know, he finished the regular season, 8 wins, 6 losses, which is right about the pace that he's won games, you know, just a little bit better than 500 through his 3 years here. As a starter, he was 8-6, an average quarterback rating of 92.7 in the last 3 games, no interceptions in that span. Those are good numbers. Those are good classic Tyrod numbers. Mm-hmm. So he's playing the last 3 games the way he can play, the way he has usually played. He's right at his standard, but is that enough, you know, to win a playoff game?
Right. Is that enough? And especially if you don't have McCoy, your number one guy out there on the field, who really is the engine that runs this offense. If you don't have him, and now you're asking for Marcus Murphy, Mike Tolbert as your running backs, and then Tyrod Taylor to actually win the game with his arm, you know, this could mean a lot for his career.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know that what the future holds for Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo, outside of Buffalo, but I do think that you may not have to agree with this, but I believe this. Every time somebody has put Tyrod Taylor to the test, he usually comes through. Can't throw over the middle. Well, nobody says that anymore. Can't win a big game on the road. He's done that now. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a playoff game. Can he win a playoff game? I would say almost every time somebody has thrown a challenge at Tyrod Taylor in his 3-year tenure here as a starter, he has answered the bell. Would you agree or not?
No, I'd agree.
Not
I think,
perfect.
No, he's not perfect. He needs a lot of work. But I think just looking at some of the games over the last couple of years, going back to last year, the Miami game, the Seattle game, which was a huge game for them on the road in that stadium against that defense that was
Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night. He played well in those games by Tyrod standards. He definitely played well in those games. So I'd expect him to actually come out and play well in this game if they have to put it on his shoulders. He's not going to throw interceptions.
Right.
You know, he might throw one or something like that, but he's not going to get in the game and throw a bunch of interceptions, even if they have to put this game on his shoulders.
Here's a call on this topic from John in Webster. Hello, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, you guys got me?
We got you. Thanks for waiting, John. You're on with us now.
Yeah, well, it's funny you guys kind of just stole my thunder. I was waiting to talk about Tyrod. I think the Twitter poll, you guys are probably right. Coaching and the culture change probably has gotten us a few wins, but Tyrod got us here. Our only loss of the season, during that slump was when we put Peterman in. Do you guys think that the resume from the playoffs will bode enough if he gets a win to bring him back? Because we saw Tebow win a playoff game and not become the quarterback the next year, and a lot of people don't see him there.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know. I would say this, John and Webster. I think that regardless of what you want to do in the offseason, and regardless of how critical I've been of Tyrod and his play, I do think that it's smart to bring him back. Even if you decide you want to draft a quarterback here in the offseason, I do think that it's smart to bring Tyrod Taylor back here, especially if you're drafting one in the first round. You don't know if he's going to be ready to play or not. Even if you don't, you know, and you want to bring somebody in through free agency, who knows what's going to happen in terms of that market. So I think it's smart to bring Tyrod back and then worry about your future quarterback moving forward. But you at least need to have him here.
I'm not prepared to say that yet. They may have other plans. They have plenty of draft capital to work with and maybe have somebody else in mind. I am prepared to say this. A year ago to the day, I don't think either one of us and most of our listeners thought Tyrod would be the quarterback in 2017.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, well, you know, contract is going to be a problem and they want to move on and a new coaching staff. And here he is. 14 starts, 8 wins later, and his team in the playoffs this time. You can't ignore that, as much as you may like or dislike Tyrod Taylor. You cannot ignore the fact that he is what he is. He's a little bit better than a 500 one-loss record. He relies on a strong running game and a solid defense. Who wouldn't want that at the quarterback spot? And as I said, when he's been put to the test, for the most part, over these 3 years, he has answered the bell. He hasn't been superstar, but he's answered the bell.
Yeah, he hasn't been super. I mean, there aren't that many super quarterbacks
right
that are coming available. There might be a little bit more this year. I just don't, for me, in terms of the money that you're paying Tyrod Taylor, and if you draft one in the first round, I just think it makes sense to bring him back.
Oh,
now,
yeah,
if you decide you want to go out on the free agent market, then you can't bring him back because now you're paying a guy $25 million a year. One of those quarterbacks, you're going to pay big money. So we'll see how that plays out. And to answer your question, the caller, if he wins a playoff game, is that enough to bring him back? That's a good question.
Know.
That's something we're going to talk about after
after
this
win
week
or lose, yeah. It's always, to your point, it usually is about the money, too.
Oh, yeah.
The money will be a big factor in all of this. All right. Mm-hmm. When we return, we're going to talk to our very own big money guy, Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back who was there in Miami leading the cheers in the concourse after the Bills won and after the Bengals won. We'll talk with Thurman about that. He's going to be in the studio with us, I believe he is. Thurman Thomas, Hall of Fame running back, coming up in just a couple of minutes. So come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Update comes from One Bills Drive. Bills have wrapped up their Wednesday practice. They did it without LeSean Shady McCoy. His ankle injury has him day-to-day. No practice today, and head coach Sean McDermott says they will take it a day at a time. Jordan Mills missing practice today with his ankle injury, not expected to be as serious. Also out today, linebacker Matt Milano with a hamstring. Wide receiver Deontay Thompson taking care of his injured shoulder. Cornerback Sharice Wright still in concussion protocol. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams with a rest day. The Bills yesterday made a move to their practice squad just in case Shady can't go. They signed free agent running back Aaron Green to the practice squad. Most recently, a member of the Cowboys practice squad, originally came into the league as an undrafted rookie from the Los Angeles Rams, a product of Texas Christian University. Bills will kick it off under 62 degrees and cloudy skies in Jacksonville on Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff there. John Hussey will be your referee. The Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars in the AFC wildcard game, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Late yesterday, the Cincinnati Bengals surprised a lot of folks when they signed Marvin Lewis to a 2-year contract extension. It was expected that he would be let go. Lewis, the NFL's second longest tenured coach, behind only Bill Belichick of the Patriots. His return comes after days of discussion with Bengals owner Mike Brown. Carson Palmer announced his retirement from football yesterday, saying he just knows it's time. He is 38 years old, first overall pick in 2003. And another quarterback out west, Jimmy Garoppolo, going to be the franchise quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, they say. News conference yesterday, the Niners GM John Lynch says, we want Jimmy to be a Niner for a long, long time. Pro Football Hall of Fame, 15 new finalists, including Terrell Owens, who played that 1 year with the Buffalo Bills. Also, Randy Moss is one of the modern era finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The vote to be held the day before the Super Bowl in the Super Bowl City in Minnesota. And in college football, the Arizona Wildcats yesterday fired football coach Rich Rodriguez after 6 seasons in the wake of a sexual harassment allegation. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones here in our One Buffalo studio. As always, on Wednesday, we are visited by the great one, the Hall of Fame running back for the Buffalo Bills, the great Thurman Thomas.
I start laughing. I didn't even say anything.
I don't even have to introduce Thurman either. You probably consider me the funniest person you know, right? Based on the way you laugh.
No, you're not. Oh. You're not.
I consider you one of the funniest people I know.
I mean, we talk about celebrities.
You're top 10.
He's been around some of the top
you have
comedians.
Been around. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm top 10.
You're top 10. Yeah.
Thurman is with us just back from his New Year's trip to Florida.
Bottom five.
Number 10.
Ranking. Let's see. Check with me in 15 minutes when this segment is over. Maybe I'll move up
10
a little
bit. Yeah. 10
B. Yeah. Drop out of the top 10. Thurman was there. You were there in Miami where you used to play. So obviously they rolled out a red carpet for you there.
No, they didn't. Actually, I got some booze. Some one finger salute stone there.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was all right.
You laid your heart and soul out for
that
franchise.
Well, they were kind of hammered. So, it was no big deal. I knew the reaction I was probably going to get, but there were some Dolphins fans that was there that was, congratulating me on a great career and wish I could have played there longer. So, I played the 1 year now. I had a great time down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nothing bad or anything. I can remember actually the first preseason game I played was against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I caught like a pass out in the flat for 15 yards and announced my name on the loudspeaker and actually got a standing ovation.
Wow. Cool.
So,
man. It was a weird atmosphere there last Sunday, I thought, right? I mean, I said to Kelso on the radio broadcast, the Miami fans, it looked like and felt like they were at a preseason game, right? They just were not interested in it, nor was their team, as it turned out.
Yeah, and you can tell that. I mean, after one series, Jay Cutler was out.
Out.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at that right there, and you can tell that they really wasn't into it, and really it was, it was another – game on the road where it was predominantly a Bills fan favorite. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were Bills fans all over the place. Yeah. And, and the Bills did what they had to do, man. I mean, 22-16, same Score, yeah, as they talk about with the Music City Miracle. Yeah. So, but it was a great atmosphere. I mean, obviously sitting around where I was sitting with, you know, the 12 or 15 people that I was with and just surrounded by the Bills fans, it was awesome, man. You know, it got to a point where it got a little crazy. Like, people were wanting to, like, take pictures. I'm like, dude, the game is going on right now. Chill, I'm trying to watch the game right now. Yo. Yeah. So, you know, my wife, Patty, you know, she's, hey, enough is enough, you know. So
she's the enforcer.
She's an enforcer, so we stop.
All right, so now here's the real interesting part. Game ends, Bills survive, win by 6, and we're all like, okay, I mean, I'm on the radio with Kelso saying, now what do we do? We just sit and wait and tell us your story and how you've, you know, followed what was going on in Baltimore.
Well, actually, you know, we were getting upstate the entire time that we were sitting there, you know, watching the game and everything, and Cincinnati went up, and then Baltimore went up. And I'm looking at the clock going like, you know, we only got like 3 minutes ago. And these guys are just starting the fourth quarter. Yeah. I mean, it was way behind, you know. And so we were like, okay, well, what are we going to do now, you know? So we actually went out into the terminal.
In the concourse area.
Yeah, and boom, there's the game, you know, winding down, you know, with the, you know, Bills fans. And we were sitting there, just a whole crowd of us, you know. And
everybody knew you.
No, not everybody. They wasn't quite sure yet. Yeah. They wasn't quite sure yet, you know?
Yeah, they like, Thurm can't be sitting here with us. Why would he be in the concourse right now? He should be in a suite or something.
Thurm should be
in the locker room with the players.
Yeah, you know? So, you know, I'm sitting there watching the game, you know? It's just, like I say, it's 15 of us. And, you know, we're watching it. And all of a sudden, you know, it gets down to 4th and 12, you know? And if I've seen so many videos,
right?
But I just keep watching them because you can't stop watching them, you know. And you know, the guy, and we should give credit to Tyler Boyd, whatever charity he has too, because he very could have easily just caught it and just went down just to tie the game. But you know, yes, and then all of a sudden it just erupted when he scored a touchdown, and you know, the celebration just took over. Before that, you know, I had about a minute hug. And I actually started crying, me and my son, Thurman.
Cool.
I mean, you know, he's 16-year-old. He's a Bills fan, you know?
Yeah.
And he's never seen anything like this, you know?
Yeah.
And we had a minute hug, and, man, I just got overwhelmed by just the excitement. It was so loud right there at that time, man. I just said, you know what? I'm jumping up. I'm going like this.
How'd you wind up? When I went up on top of the table, right?
Coyote Ugly.
I'm still athletic.
but why? I mean, you're just.
Why not?
No one else in this video was.
Well, I figured I'd kind of stand out. Yeah, because nobody else was doing it. So I figured I'd do it, right? So I jumped up, and that's when it hit everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, that's Thurman. So, yeah, after that was all over, man, you know, I jumped down, signed some autographs, took some pictures, and it was a great moment, you know, for not only for myself, but the fans, man. I mean, it was unfree. I'm just walking all the way out down to where the players' buses were. I mean, it was just constant Bills shouts, Bills hugs, and it was unbelievable, man. And this is just being a fan now, and which I am, and man, just got overwhelmed with everything that happened in that moment. I mean, from the ride home, you know, just watching videos and.
This is from a guy, Donald, who's been in 4 AFC championship winning locker rooms. So you've been around that kind of victory, that kind of rush, and yet this one seems to hit you.
Yeah, it did. Because, you know, I'm not playing anymore. I'm a fan. Yeah. You know, I'm outside in the concourse with the fans that I have no idea who they are.
Right.
But I know that they're Bills fans. And from the time we left the stadium all the way out to the parking lot, man, Bills fans were everywhere. Enjoying the moment, high-fiving everybody, and people were doing everything.
Yeah,
I mean, it was one of the most emotional moments.
You couldn't write
in
it
Bills
any better.
You couldn't
really, like I said this to Murph earlier. If the Bengals would have just blown out the Ravens, it would have been like people would have been happy, like, oh man, they're in it. But the way it happened, it was like you can't write this thing any better. This thing actually on 4th and 12 after they just threw an interception.
Right?
I mean, I'm telling you, I said this yesterday. I was like, Andy Dalton is terrible. This dude is not going to make this happen. And then all of a sudden he throws the touchdown pass, and I'm like, oh, that just happened for real. You know, it's just the way it happened. So that's why, John, as we were talking earlier, it has to go down to top 10 events in this franchise's history.
We're going to talk with you about this in a couple of minutes, sir. Today's the 25th anniversary of the comeback game.
Right.
and I don't like to write history days after it happened, but years from now, when people sit down and make the new top 10 list of Bills moments, what happened Sunday will be in that list, right? Just the moment, not just the win at Miami, but the whole thing, the whole, the way it went down. Top 10. I'm not saying better than the comeback game.
I don't know if it's, yeah, I'd say top 10. I mean, right now, I'd probably put it at 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, you want to go through all the moments or whatever, but I mean, I'm throwing it right there at 5, you know, and it's kind of weird that you had to kind of rely on somebody else to do it and not be your own history, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not like Tyrod throwing to Charles Clay to get us into right. You know, it's somebody who another team that's get us in. I mean, and this right here, man.
With Kyle in the locker
room. Kyle in the locker room. I mean, and I've been thinking about this the whole time, man. If other players are free agents that are thinking about where they want to go next year, to a family, a closer. I mean, there's Micah Hyde jumping on somebody. Probably been knowing the guy for a year, you know. And look at this locker room. You got McDermott. You got, I mean, it was just owner an awesome feeling, man. And you know, and let's not hope that it ends Sunday. You know, let's hope it keeps going. So, I mean, but just to see that right there, if other players are watching that and going like, you know what, that's the type of atmosphere and type of players that I want to be around, right there. And look at the fan. I mean, the fan support has been unfreaking believable.
Can I tell you a quick story? And yeah. Kyle was it yesterday? Kyle was here yesterday. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have time to get to it on the air, but he told me this story, Thurman. You would appreciate this as much as anybody. He got, Kyle, what did he say, 300 texts he got? One of them was from Drew Hull, Kent's son.
Yes, yeah.
And he said what got him was Drew Hull said to Kyle Williams on text, look, if you don't ever worry or don't ever wonder if your two young sons will – forget about that moment. And Drew Hull said, my dad did that for me, and I'll never forget that. We're going in the locker room to celebrate like that and a big win like that. And Kyle got choked up telling me that here yesterday. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, Ken Hull's son telling Kyle Williams, hey, you did the right thing. Your kids will always remember being in there.
Always remember that. I mean, just like, you know, even though my son is 16, I always remember that hug that we had right after the game.
Yeah.
Always remember that. I mean, and he's 16, and I'm 51, but – at that moment, you know, he's like, wow, Dad, this really happened in my lifetime. And we were together.
It's a bond.
And it happened.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, just for the family that I was with, Paul Lavullo and his family, his younger son, Griffin, who's 19, was just as proud, too.
Sure.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And, man, it's... I feel like I'm about to get choked up here a little bit, you know.
That's what I'm going for.
I mean, because it's, you know, it's something special.
Yeah.
It really is something special. For 17 years and have it happen and go down like that,
yeah,
man, everybody that's a Bill fan will remember this moment
for
the rest of their lives.
I do want to move on from the events of Sunday, but the end of your Sunday, your New Year's Eve, Mr. Celebrity
Celebrity
greatness.
Actually, it was New Year's Day.
Oh, New Year's Day.
Yes, it was New Year's Day. The next day.
Tell us about the next day.
Well, you know, Jack Nicklaus is my friend. You know,
My friend.
He's my friend. He invited me over to dinner, and
At the game. Did you see him at the game?
He was at the game. Yeah, I didn't get to see him at the game because we had like 15 people, and they were like, "Yeah, Thurman, you can go back there in the back with the players, everybody else can't go." So I didn't want to feel bad, so I left. And but the next day, you know, got a text from Jack and said, "Hey, Barb and I are cooking dinner and having family and friends over and I'd like for you to come over." It's like, all right. So, and then Nick O'Leary's mom, Nan, she texts Pat and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I got a text from Jack. Yeah, we're going. I already got that message from him. And so, we went over, spent about an hour and a half over at Jack's lovely place on the water. They've been in this place for 50 years.
Wow.
Okay. Redid it. I didn't know he was an avid hunter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's an avid hunter. And,
chipping green in back or putting?
All that stuff is gone.
Okay.
His wife said, years ago we got rid of all this stuff. Only thing that's left there is a bunker, sand bunker.
That's
the only thing. But he got a tennis court and all that stuff. He got like 4 big yachts in the back. You know,
green jackets hanging up in every room, Masters.
No, I didn't go back in all
in. You didn't go in the closet?
No, I didn't go in looking around or whatever. You know, I was
just to try on.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to do anything like that. But it was Jack. You know, and we had a nice conversation, and he told me the story. He said, you know, I was sitting there, I was talking to this one guy, and he had a coat and tie on and everything, and we're just talking. He was like, I'm so glad that we got Nick on the team. You know, he's been a great, great player for us and had a touchdown or whatever. And then he left, and Jack was like, was that Coach McDermott? He didn't know it was Coach McDermott. Oh. He didn't know it was him. So I said, I have his number if you want it, you know. Yeah. So here it is. So he said he was going to send him a little message.
Oh, that's cool. Man.
So, no, it was a great weekend, man.
Yeah.
It was a great weekend.
The whole family and most of your family down there?
Most of my family, yeah. All my kids went except one. Angel great. Couldn't make. She stayed home and watched the dog. So it was great. It was a
Miami.
Great weekend, yeah. Yeah, I know.
I feel like I live vicariously. I mean, I'm down there. I'm working, but you're having the best time. Dermot Thomas in studio with us.
Dermot living the best version of his life.
Yeah, really.
I am.
You're a lucky man. You know how lucky you are.
I am,
right?
Man. This is my Super Bowl life. Yeah, that I'm living now.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
I love being around you. You are so. Dermot Thomas in studio with us. Derm, let's move it forward here a little bit.
Yeah.
How do they get beyond the giddiness of Sunday and get ready to play again this Sunday?
Well, you know what? It's been like almost an up and down season anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Roller coaster season for them. You know, they got the perfect guy for it, Coach McDermott. I mean, he's kept these guys level-headed throughout the entire process, throughout the entire year. So, yeah, you get ready for it. But, I mean, I think you have the energy, you know. You're going into a playoff game, you have that energy. Mm-hmm. You have that extra step, an extra whatever in your step, you know. Yeah. And so I think these guys are ready. I think they're going to be prepared. When has there been a game where they weren't prepared? Right. It just seemed like these guys, yeah, there's been some games, the Raiders game where they got blown out or whatever, but if you look at every single game, man, they have been prepared.
Now, the elephant in the room, as Murph said earlier, is LeSean McCoy, and if he's going to be healthy enough to play in that game, what's it like as a running back? I don't know if you had ankle injuries, but what's it like as a running back to have to deal with those? That type of injury.
Well, you know, I mean, going into the playoffs, I mean, that's obviously a big part. He's the best player on the football team the last couple of years. And obviously going into a playoff game, you know, if you're the other team, he has an ankle injury. Mm-hmm. You know, if he does play and he get tackled, I'm sure that ankle is going to be twisted
a little bit.
That's just how it works in the NFL. You know that. Mm-hmm. And I know that. So, you know, if I'm him, you know the offensive game plan. You know the scheme that you're running. You know, is he going to practice this week? I have no idea.
I don't think he should.
I don't think he should. I mean, we know what he can do.
Right.
If you sit him out, you get him treatment 2 or 3 times a day, all the way up to Sunday, and if he feels good to go, you go. I don't think – this is not a guy where you're just picking up the street and coming in and say, oh, you got to play. Mm-hmm. You know, no, this is a guy who's been in the league for 9-10 years. He knows what to do. Mm-hmm. He keeps in very, very good shape year-round. So, man, you tape that ankle up as tight as you can and try to give it as much support as you can.
With spat,
and
everything on
that
foot.
But if he doesn't play, this is where what we talked about early in the season when the defense came through. I mean, they're not playing against an outstanding quarterback in Blake Bortles.
Right.
You know, although the Jacksonville do have a great defense.
Yeah.
They're going to be fired up. At home, first playoff game in a long time. But, it's probably going to come down to the defense and what they can do to shut down Jacksonville's running game, because you know Fournette is going to come. They're going to run it at least 30 times with him. Mm-hmm. That's just Doug Marrone's style. That's what they want to do. And but if you can force Blake Bortles to have to throw it 30, 40 times, and the way that our secondary has been playing, I like our chances in that situation.
Yeah.
Thurman, changing subjects again, 25 years ago today, greatest comeback game. You were there, you started the game, and then were forced to leave. But do you get a little misty-eyed when you think about that comeback win or 25 years later?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, 65,000 folks there, not a sellout. It was blacked out.
That's right.
Frank Wright and Jim and I always talk about, you know, this was kind of Andre Reed's coming out party.
Yeah.
I mean, this was his game, you know, because it was always like Jim, Thurman, Andre. No, this was all Andre right here, and having Frank Wright be the backup quarterback and coming in, you know, just a special moment, man. I mean, that's 25 years ago.
Today. How often do you think about that game? Like every day, once a week, every couple months?
usually when people bring it up.
Yeah.
And usually when people, I mean, obviously there are special dates to it or whatever, but yeah, I mean, it's every time I see Steve Christie, somebody like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get emotional about it, but you know, it's just when people bring it up, you know, it's not something that I look forward to, you know, every 5 years or whatever, you know, it's always a certain day and time where this comes up. Yeah. And yeah, then you start thinking about, you know, I can probably go through an entire game and give you every single play that happened. So, and then once I go back to Houston, I always see a couple of people. Buffalo, oh, God, I hate you. Oh, my God, Jesus, that was the worst ever. Yeah.
You know, one of the great things about that win this past Sunday, and not to take anything away from what you guys did, but it's time for new memories to be made here, don't you think?
Oh, no
doubt.
Time
for new legacies to be built.
Oh, man, you know what? Jim and I always have this conversation at least once or twice a year. Yeah, as much as we did in those years or whatever, it's time for some new memories.
Yeah.
For the people that are growing up now.
Yeah.
It's time for their memories. Yeah, and Jim is like, I'm fine with that. We're waiting on the first Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's what we're waiting on. We want to see some new memories. You guys were great. Yeah.
You're like, man, it was 25 years ago.
Right, exactly. You know, you guys were great back then and all this. I'm like, yeah, thank you, you know. But I'm looking forward to talking about stuff now.
Yeah.
And, man, Sunday was a great way to start.
You know, speaking of you and Jim talking about memories and things like that, you guys are on this big group message. So what was said in the group after the win?
Oh, man, it was
Anything you can share?
No, I can't share anything. But, I mean, it was a good 25 minutes, man. You know, the first thing, who's going to Jacksonville?
Mm-hmm. So are you going?
I think I am going. I think Bruce is going. Darryl, Cornelius.
Oh man.
Oh yes. So the memories will be brought up again.
Steve will be there on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it'll be the memories will be brought up again. But to have all those guys there, yeah, I mean, we talked about it and just so excited. And after the game, I sent Coach McDermott a text. Jim sent him a text, and he sent back a picture of us taking a picture with him the night that we had dinner,
mm-hmm.
And said and was like, "Hey guys, you know, this is kind of where it all started. You know, getting the writing down the notes of how you guys did it and what you all went through, and you know, just a nice gesture from a nice head coach, and so glad that he's a part of this organization, and the Pegulas made the right decision to hire him as their new head coach, and he's obviously first year coach." Been up and down, made some decisions that kind of, you know, didn't sit well with fans or some players or whatever. But to have him in this position right now, perfect guy for
those
the job.
Those decisions don't matter.
Those decisions don't even matter right now.
What decisions, right?
I could have started at quarterback.
Yeah,
it wouldn't even matter.
Thurman, thanks for this. I hope I see you down there in Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah. Man, hopefully up here talking about it. Where are we going next week, man?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it'll be bonkers. That'll be another memory.
Yeah.
That'll be back to Foxborough.
Top of each other. Thank you, Thurman.
You're welcome.
Always great to have you here. Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back, joining us in studio. Coming up next, Kim Jones from the NFL Network and NFL.com. We'll get her take on the events of last Sunday, and she's going to be covering the game on Sunday in Jacksonville as well. That's coming up next. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, and our thanks to Thurman Thomas, who enjoyed himself in Miami, clearly, last week. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, joined by, I'm ready to declare, the best friend the show has ever had. Kim Jones from the NFL Network is here. We've had a lot of good friends on this show.
In the world am I supposed to follow Thurman?
Well, yeah.
That's impossible.
Yeah. He's good. And he's got some stories.
I'm sure he does.
He's always, and Donald knows this, he's always running into other, like, major celebrities. Not just B-list.
Like A-list celebrities.
He had dinner with Jack Nicklaus in Florida the other night.
Oh, did he really? Well,
top that.
Jack was there for the bowl game, right?
Yeah, he was there for Nick O'Leary, his grandson.
Right, and then.
And then at Thurman.
But it wasn't like, you know, he ran into Jack and was like, "Jack, can I come over for dinner?" It was like Jack sent him a message. "Hey, you want to come over for dinner?"
That's great. Yeah. That's great. I don't run in that circle. Just
he talked about meeting Tiger Woods in a grocery store.
Oh, really? You know, so well, that's random, now. Though, right?
Yeah. He is a major celebrity. Kim, you are our favorite celebrity.
Well,
we are happy
you.
To have
not
you here.
Not a celebrity, though.
I told you Sunday morning, I wake up in Fort Lauderdale, 7 in the morning, and Kim is there in Foxborough.
Yeah.
What was it, 0, 2, 3
it was
degrees?
Zero, but real feel was like -5 and -6 all day. It was cold.
I've never seen anybody look colder. You look great.
I look cold when it's 46. So -6, I'm going to look really cold. Yeah, I do not like cold weather. I don't like to stand out in it. It is my job, and I love my job. So that obviously trumps all. But, man, you don't get used to that cold.
Yeah. And now you've got to head to Jacksonville. You'll be
it will not be as cold. Yeah. It won't be tropical, but it will not be as cold.
It won't be tropical. I actually saw today it was snowing down there in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville?
Yes.
I wonder how they handle the snow.
Yeah.
Like, I flew in last night with my producer, Christine Martin, and we just stay at the airport hotel. You know, mm-hmm. you're just here for one night. That's easiest. So I'm driving. We have no need to have two rental cars. So I drive over, and the snow, like, isn't really plowed or anything. Yeah. And I said to her, like, this is Buffalo. Like, we're tough. We can do this. What the heck does a little snow bother us? If it were Atlanta, the city would be shut down.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think Donald's fully adopted that.
He hasn't adopted the mindset?
I have not. I don't think I'll ever get used to the snow. And I'm from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Whatever. Go it's a different snow here.
Hey, you've been around this team all day. You know the story. You know what went on last week. How, Kim, would you assess where this Bills team is now? And should they worry about, you know, being giddy about what went on here last weekend?
They're happy. I think it's wonderful to see this kind of joy. I do. I love it. I embrace it. I hope they win Sunday. Isn't going to change my reporting.
Okay.
I probably can. I probably can't. Whatever. Hey, Tom Coughlin will yell at me if he hears me. I know. But, you know, listen, it's a great – they're the best story of the playoffs. They just are. I factor in what happened the week before in Foxborough.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk, I was hoping to see Kelvin Benjamin in the locker room today. I did not, but I was hoping to. I think it is fantastic. I think they're allowed to enjoy it. I think their flight home. I was on charter flights all the time with the Yankees. I've been on happier charters than not, and not happy charters. But a happy charter is ridiculous, and it sounds like theirs was a whole lot of fun with freestyle rapping, with midnight, with everything else.
Yeah.
But the key to me was what I was told was Tyrod Taylor was watching film.
Yes, and I did know. I neglected to mention that to you because Donald was asking me about the charter. And one thing, amid all the partying, at one point Tyrod goes up front to the front cabin with his tablet. And I thought, really?
Listen.
He's with his tablet.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Tyrod gets outworked, out-prepared.
Right.
I don't think he's ever out-committed. I don't know that I think I'm making up a couple words here. But I don't think you can ask for more from Tyrod in many of the boxes that are the big ones to check. And I'm not saying he's perfect, and I know he holds on to the ball a little bit too long sometimes. Mm-hmm. I get that. I think his commitment to trying to make a play kind of overrides the ticking clock, and I can't say I understand it. I'm not a quarterback, but I can certainly appreciate it. But Tyrod Taylor is, to me, a remarkable leader at that position, and work ethic and commitment never, ever questioned. Right.
Big question, of course, is McCoy.
Shady's 0-3 in the playoffs.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
He has the second most rushing yards all time for a running back who's never made the playoffs. First is O.J. Simpson, or never won a playoff game. And O.J. Simpson's first, and that's not going to change. But Shady, 0-3 with Philly. I believe I saw his most recent game, which was the Saints loss a couple years ago. And you just hope, like, heck, he can get out there.
Yeah, you got a feel for a guy who has been this offense. Mm-hmm. We talk about Tyrod Taylor, and he's made some huge plays this year, but LeSean McCoy is the engine that makes this thing go. And when he can't go, he can't finish out a game, you can just see the frustration when he's slamming his fist down on the ground.
Can he get out there? Can he get out there and stay out there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's where Murphy from the practice squad.
Yeah, we just had him on the show earlier.
That's remarkable, by the way.
It's his cousin, by the way.
Practice. Yeah, they. I can see the relation. They activate him last week, and then they need him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right now, that's luck.
Yeah.
There's an element of luck there, right? But that's luck. But for LeSean McCoy to be carted off and upset about the and listen, guys are upset when they're injured. I totally understand that and appreciate that. But LeSean McCoy, you know, will do everything he can to get out there. Staying out there is one thing, and being shady. Shady's not shady running A to B, right?
North
He's
north
going
south,
A to B with C, D, E, and F in between. Right. That's the fun of Shady. So hopefully he plays.
with Kim Jones from the NFL Network in studio with us here in Orchard Park. In my never-ending quest to find a silver lining, though, Kim, I mentioned this to Donald in the first hour of the show. The Bills beat – look, I know Miami-Jacksonville, two different situations, but the Bills beat the Dolphins last week when Shady only had 10 yards on 11 carries. They found a way, which leads me to think that there might be a way. I don't know what it is yet, but there might be a way.
I'm not saying they can't win the game. Yeah. I'm definitely not saying that. I would love for LeSean – for him to be out there and have a chance to win a playoff game and to really contribute. And he is so important to this team. I'll tell you, in talking to Tyrod today, one thing he said is, you know, if he hopes LeSean can go, obviously. And if he can't, he knows more is on him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting dynamic going into this game. And it is true. You can't argue it, right? Yeah. But for him to say that when I spoke to him one-on-one struck me. And I'll use that later on NFL Network. I'll probably use it Saturday and Sunday on NFL Network when we have extensive pregame coverage. But I do find that to be interesting going into this game, that you have a quarterback who has had the ups and downs this season. It hasn't been a storybook for Tyrod Taylor. Mm-hmm. And here he is, the first quarterback since 1999 to lead your Bills into the playoffs.
Now, what about, there was so much talk of when, in this offseason, when they were looking for a coach, they hired Sean McDermott, and everybody, a lot of national reporters were saying he's the right guy for the job. Knowing him, he's the right guy for the job. For him to now have this team, 17 years without a playoff appearance, and now sitting in his first year in the playoffs, what's your thoughts on
that? What a great coach, right? Yeah. What a great coach Sean McDermott is. And he encouraged, from what I understand from a distance, he encouraged players to tell their stories to each other early on. Yeah. That obviously fosters camaraderie and friendship and teamwork and mutual respect, which you don't have to be buddies, but the mutual respect in a locker room so important. And the defend our dirt. Mm-hmm. Do I got the pronoun right? Defend our dirt. And important to not... you know, dread weather, to not dread elements or, you know, oh gosh, what's it going to be like a home game in November or December? But, you know, defending and being proud of what's yours and what an opponent has to come into. And it's a great home crowd here. I don't have to tell you guys that. So I think Sean McDermott, to me, every bit the coach of the year candidate that like a Sean McVay would be. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's going to break down. I'm not a voter in any of that. I just get to give my opinion here when I do sports talk radio, that kind of thing. But to me, every bit the idea, because he had a lot to overcome here.
Right.
And they overcame it. Listen, did they need the Ravens to do their part, or I should say the Bengals to do their part? Yeah, they did. But you know what? That's the NFL, and you never apologize. You never apologize for punching a playoff ticket. Ever, ever, ever.
Right.
You know, you mentioned the weather. I just had a funny – Sean does this thing now, and especially after the Colts game a couple weeks ago, he talks about palm trees. He's done it to me. Like in the middle of this bad winter we're having, he's like, you see the palm trees out there? And I'm like, no. And he goes, they're out there. Look for the palm – but players now say, Coach, I see the palm trees. I see them out there.
I needed Sean at about 7:30 a.m. last Sunday in Foxborough to tell me about palm trees because I was thinking about freezing my tail off.
Yeah. Kim, tell us, how good do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars are?
You know, I think they're good, and I love Fournette. Loved him at the Combine. I'm lucky that I get to meet some of those guys in my reporter role at the Combine. Loved him. Treated me great. And I remember asking him, like, are you ready for the big load of, you know, NFL season after he was drafted by Jacksonville? And he said, it's what I did at LSU. And we certainly did see that.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it again. I think Blake Bortles is the obvious X factor. It's hard to say. When a quarterback's an X factor, I think it gives you pause. The safeties on this team, I suspect – will disguise and confuse him to some degree.
Yeah.
You may not be able to confuse Tom Brady, and I get that. And they played pretty good against him, by the way, last time out, especially. But I do think that there are some things that Buffalo will have going for it that it can use to pull off, I guess, an upset.
It would certainly be considered
an upset, right? But to me, it certainly isn't an unwinnable game. It's not some mountain to climb. Even with, you know, listen, if LeSean's healthy, we're having a different conversation, right? He's not, so we'll put that as a question mark right now. But there is no doubt that the way this defense is playing, the way some of your offensive players have come through. Listen, I love Kelvin Benjamin. I love him, Donald. You'd know better than I why he doesn't dominate games.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that. I do know if I were a quarterback, I'd give him a chance to. And I would say, Kelvin, we don't have LeSean. We have you, and you're bigger, taller, and your catch radius is the size of the ocean.
Yeah.
So you're going to make some plays, and we're going to win games.
You're going to need he and Tyrod and the rest of the receivers to have big games against two corners that are pretty good out in Jacksonville. Now, you know Tom Coughlin from covering the Giants.
Yes.
And to be honest with you, this Jacksonville team is the formula that he won Super Bowls with the Giants, a very strong defense, especially up front, and a very strong running game.
Have you had a chance to speak to him about his team this year and how good they've been?
I have not. I have not talked to Tom since training camp at Foxborough when the Jaguars practiced against the Patriots. Tom, yeah, listen, I get the formula. The quarterback would be different. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Giants won one of those Super Bowls with the last ranked running defense, running offense, rush offense in the league.
Right.
So we think of them as running, and I understand that we do, but they really didn't run the ball very well, and they still were able to come through. So they did defy kind of expectations there or formula there. I think that Jacksonville was already on its way, and I'd be the last person to in any way diminish what Coughlin has done. So I'm not diminishing Tom Coughlin's role there. I think Tom's role, though, probably put punctuation on a sentence where the subject and verb were already in place. They had a lot of talent. How many years, year after year, the first-round draft picks they've had talent-wise jump off the screen? They haven't always performed, and they certainly haven't always played healthy or been healthy. But this is a team that's been years and years in the making. And I do think Tom has certainly had a good effect. There's no doubt about that.
Kim, the last thing I have for you, and as Donna mentioned, you cover the Giants, including this year's Giants, and I'm so happy they hired Mr. Old School Dave Gettleman as the GM, because I love that guy. But what do you think he has in mind? What kind of a coach would Gettleman be looking for that team?
Well, John Mara will hire the coach.
Okay.
And Steve Tisch and Dave Gettleman, but John Mara hired Ben McAdoo, for example. So John Mara has said he really wants head coaching experience, or at the very least, a coordinator with a track record of experience. So to me, that means not a first-year coordinator, probably. To me, that means not a Ben McAdoo, probably. He also said a man who can command a room. And he didn't just mean a room of players and coaches and staff members. He meant the media, which is a big part of what the Giants coach has to be. And he meant commander room figuratively as well. I think they are looking for someone who can really, really lead and demand from players. I don't know who it is, John. I honestly don't know. I don't know who it is. I don't know who it is. Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia. I'm going to leave out guys. I think Pat Shurmur is going to be interviewed. Dave Wilkes from Carolina is going to be interviewed. You know, there's a long list. And who knows who they come up with. I honestly think it could be anyone.
You know, as we talk about the coach, there is a lot being talked about with Eli Apple down there. What's going on with
him? Yeah, I mean, there was an extensive report about his personal life and how some of that has fractured around him. I think Eli has some growing up to do. I think he has to learn how to be a better teammate, a more mature and accountable teammate. I think he has to learn to play hard, but he's very, very talented. There is no doubt. We saw him as a rookie play a lot better than he did this year, and he can play, and he can be part of a winning secondary because he was a year ago.
I know you got work to do, right? Live shots from here?
Live shots.
Park.
NFL Network, I believe, at the top of the hour at 4 and 5 Eastern, and then we'll have a couple tape pieces that you can catch. One, I think, on Total Access tonight and Good Morning Football tomorrow. And I believe they are airing today in the 4 and 5 o'clock hour my Tyrod Taylor interview I mentioned. All and right. It's long. It's about 3 minutes. But I believe they're airing that today as well, which I'm excited about.
Folks can look for that. Kim, thank you, as always.
Thank you, guys. You so really enjoyed it. See you Sunday, right?
We'll see you down there in
Jacksonville. Okay, look forward to it.
Kim Jones from the NFL Network. You can see her work from here in Orchard Park on the network later today. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We started off early today with Andy Dalton, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback. More than $170,000 of donations to his foundation in Cincinnati from Bills fans after he helped the Bills get in the playoffs. Here's what Andy Dalton had to say.
I had seen one or two people on Twitter to say, we're going to make a donation to your foundation. And I think a lot of Bills fans should. And I didn't think much of it at the time. And then the company that helps us run our foundation, Prolanthropy, they reached out to us and said, you'll have no idea, you know, how much we're getting from the Bills fans. And literally, I think we were getting at least 10 donations a minute. And so, I mean, the outpour of support for our foundation has been unbelievable.
All story is unbelievable. It's an amazing story. What did we learn? We had Marcus Murphy on the show. The Bills running back just signed to the active roster 8 or 9 days ago. Who knows, with Shady McCoy not making it through practice today, he might have to play. Here's what Marcus Murphy told us about his possible role in the wild card playoff game.
My mindset is that I'm going to approach it the same way I did last week. You know, it's a postseason game, but I'm treating it just like a regular season, you know, a regular Sunday. You know, you got to come out, you have to execute during the week, you know, put in the work. And, I mean, I have Mike Tolbert, you know, I have guys like Pat, DeMarco, you know, they've been in the playoffs. They've been in this situation before. So, you know, I just look up to those guys, and they give out, you know, little pointers and everything to help me out.
Marcus Murphy, possibly a big role to play. Hey, we neglected to do this earlier, but we do want to present units milestones, some of the milestones in the win over the Dolphins. With the win over Miami, Sean McDermott became just the fourth Bills head coach to win 9 games in his first season with the franchise. That's milestones presented by Units Upstate New York Transplant Services. Save lives. Join Team Units. Donate blood. Visit units.org. And we have the injury report, the first one of the week on this Wednesday, first day of the practice week. And as far as injuries for the Buffalo Bills are concerned, I didn't see the injury report. I was hoping to see it on screen. Wait a minute. There it is. No practice today for Lorenzo Alexander. None for LeSean McCoy. None for Matt Milano. No practice for Jordan Mills, Deontay Thompson, Kyle Williams, Sharice Wright. Limited work for Calvin Benjamin and Charles Clay. Donald, big show tomorrow.
Big show tomorrow. Just to leave everybody with this. Kyle Williams in the locker room talking about he and Marcel's relationship as he's now going to face Marcel. He said, "We have a special relationship. I wish him enough luck to get second place on Sunday."
Love it. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Tomorrow at noon, we're right back here with another installment of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.